saying, man. I know what you're saying, man.
Oh, okay.
And we're good to go?
Good to go.
All right, we will call this meeting to order. This is Tuesday, April 21st, 2015, meeting of the Senate Transportation and Public Safety Finance Division. Members, we have two bills on the agenda, Senate File 1904, which is our transportation finance bill. And then we will go to Senate File 1647, the Omnibus Transportation Policy Bill, which we pulled back from the floor for the purpose of receiving our policy items from the finance bill that we've taken out because they don't have a nexus with finance. And the plan, members, is to go right to amendments and or questions. And as we take amendments, particularly if they're new subjects, we'll want to hear a little bit more about those, and or if folks in the audience have any information or perspective they'd like to share on those as they're offered, I'll invite that to occur. And then once amendments have concluded, we'll open up for brief public testimony on the bill before we take the final vote. And then we'll move to Senate File 1647 and handle that in the same way. I'm going to operate Tomasoni style from this chair rather than that chair. Something new and different. We'll see how that works out, unless people really want me down there. With that, and if I have an amendment to offer myself, should I offer an amendment, I'll just offer the gavel to our vice chair, Senator Kent. So with that, members, Senate File 1904 is taken from the table. We have a quorum, by the way. Questions and or amendments? Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A-12 amendment.
Senator Champion offers the A-12.
And Mr. Chair, if
Senator
I might,
Champion.
And to the A-12 amendment, I would like to also do an oral amendment as well.
All right.
Line 1.17, and you see where it says the effective date is January 1st, 2014. That should be 2016. That's also at line 1.28, and also at 2.6 and 2.19. It's the same change. It's just that when this was done, it did not incorporate the right effective date.
We'll just incorporate those into the A-12.
And if I might, Mr. Chair, this amendment really is the driver's license for all bill that has already passed through this committee. The only change is that we did take out the repeal. Well, it was two changes. One, we did take out the repealers because we did learn that it wasn't necessary to take out the repealers. And then number two, my earlier version, I put driver's license for all, for driving privileges only on the back, and now I'm putting it back on the front of the card, which is the way it was in 2013 when we passed this bill. And so with that, I will stand for questions, but I hope that the committee will accept or adopt this amendment.
All right. Thank you, Senator Champion. Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Champion. You know, this has always struck me as more policy than fiscal or finance. Is it just the license fee on page two that makes it more finance? Is this the appropriate bill?
Senator Reiner, we had that discussion yesterday. I think we decided it was more fiscal. Well, there's enough fiscal nexus to put it in the finance bill. because of that. It has a fiscal note, yeah.
And it also has a fiscal note.
Great. Yeah. Thank you.
All right. Yeah. All right. Other questions, members? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do we have a copy of the fiscal note? And from my perspective, I guess I'd like to hear from the department in terms of what they think this is going to cost. When we talked about this before, I was just working to find it here again. We recognized, or I recognized, an article from the Denver Post, which demonstrated the licensing department in Colorado was vastly underprepared for this change, in that basically it shut down their licensing division system. It crashed their online system, if I recall correctly, and if I have fine, I can find the article again. It was, that department was statewide, was taking somewhere in the neighborhood of 8,000 or 9,000 phone calls an hour, and they were vastly understaffed and vastly underprepared for the costs that were associated with adding this provision. And in fact, I think if I recall, our fiscal note said something to the effect, well, Mr. Chair, do we have our fiscal note here, or are we going to be reviewing that? Or
Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, we don't have copies of the fiscal note. We can get them if the committee would like, but I do have it in front of me on the system. If I recall correctly, there were questions about the fiscal note, and it was not updated after a committee for the bill, but the original fiscal note says that the cost will be $17,000 one time from the Special Revenue Fund and Driver Services for a cost of a mailing to inform people of updated identification requirements.
So, Mr. Chair, do you agree with that fiscal note that it's going to be $17,000 cost?
I have, Senator Peterson, I don't have any evidence to any reason to disagree. You had questions for the agency.
Yep.
So maybe they can respond.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
With more information.
Ms. McCormick, are you confident that $17,000 is going to cover the cost of this bill to your department?
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the record, Pat McCormick, Director of Driver and Vehicle Services. Based on the amendment that Senator Champion is talking about, he's talking about a different header on the driver's license, and so there would be a cost associated with that. I can't tell you offhand what that cost would be. I think it's at least $75,000, but I don't have our contract with me. In terms of the staffing, that was not something that we looked at initially. I understand. I remember Senator Peterson talking about it during the hearing, and certainly that would be something that we would have to look at in terms of implementation, but I don't have any, we haven't done any formal evaluation of the implementation.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, you know, after that, I think you had a staff member here that had checked with a number of neighboring states, and then is there any chance she talked with the State of Colorado Licensing Division after our conversation to see what they experienced? Or
Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, I know we were checking with AMVA on that, but I don't have that information, so I wouldn't want to. I can get back to the committee on it, but I wouldn't want to provide an estimate without talking to staff.
All good.
Okay, thank
Mr. Chair.
You.
Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. In my understanding, Senator Peterson was this and Senator Champion can clarify too, that this is going back to a law we had in place, or at least reverting back to the status that we had in 2008. So I don't believe we laid off people. Maybe we can talk about that in terms of staff, but this was already law and a practice in Minnesota, so we're reverting back to that. So I understand your concerns about staffing and the influx of potential people that can come in, and as is the case in Denver, but in Minnesota we have a different scenario than Denver. This is going back to and reverting back to an existing practice. So unless we have real facts about the population, the fiscal note, and really knowing how many people we expect to come back into the system. Again, I believe we have a different environment scenario because we are reverting back to a law that was in place. So we did deal with this previously in Minnesota, so it's not completely new. It's just a comment, and maybe Senator Champion has more to add on that.
Senator Champion.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, I think that she did a fine job there, and I think that we're ready to go forward. There are the timelines there that would give the department any time that they need in order to make sure that they're able to implement this as well. So,
I was going to make another kind of general announcement that I forgot. So it's a busy morning. There are committees going on all over the building. Members of this committee are supposed to be in literally two other places at the same time. So it's going to be, sometimes we're going to have to pause, get folks back in the room to make votes. I want to respect the rights of both sides. So, you know, Senator Peterson, let's, you know, stay in communication so that if you know members want to be present for a particular vote, we can pause and respect that and get people in the room for votes. So it means it's going to, things might not go as fast as we would hope. We might have to come back after session. Senator Peterson.
Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Ms. McCormick, I did find the article again, and it states, and folks can find this on their own. I found it. I found it in less than a minute here. Basically, essentially, there was 150,000 applicants, and I forgot what our fiscal note said. Was it 30,000?
17.
Pardon?
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, 17,000.
Okay, so Mr. Chair, Ms. McCormick, I'm concerned for your department. The fiscal note is saying there's going to be 17,000 applicants. In Colorado, there was 150,000. So whether those folks are coming from other states, I don't know. I'm sure the Department of Licensing or the Licensing Division in Colorado can answer those questions. In addition, the article says originally their bill was assigned a $855,000 cost, and the governor then took that back to about half that. He allotted $435,000, and then, of course, folks can read that article on their own. It, like I said, it shut down their system statewide. Their online system crashed, and, of course, their customer service staff at the counters were overwhelmed. So,
do you want to?
I would urge members not to support this amendment until we have a little more accurate information in terms of what's going to happen on when's your bill going to affect.
January 1st, Mr. Chair, January 1st, 2016.
So, I mean, this is going to happen in basically 6 months. Members, I would urge you to not support this amendment until we get a little better handle on what's going to happen.
Senator Peterson, I think Ms. Boyd wanted to correct the figure. I think she was talking about the money.
Yeah, Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson, I'm sorry. It's a small change, but the fiscal note, not to this amendment but to the original bill, talked about serving 32,000 people that have this current status check. But I was answering 17,000. Apologize.
Sure. Thank you. All right. Senator Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would agree with Senator Peterson that essentially what we're being asked to do is move a bill forward when we don't know what the cost is going to be. We don't, in fact, have the fiscal note in front of us, so we are unable to read the assumptions and the language in the fiscal note. The department has indicated kind of an educated guess of $75,000 for a header, and they don't know what the cost of staffing is going to be. So I just think it would be inappropriate to move forward with this amendment because we simply do not know what the cost is going to be.
Thank Mr.
You.
Chair.
Senator Champion.
Let me correct something because it seems like my good friends across the aisle are constantly saying something that I would hope that I can provide some additional information. This particular bill that is this amendment that is before you is what passed here in 2013. We did the necessary fiscal note that articulates, based on this information that's before you, what it will cost the department. And so I believe that there is this certainty and there's the clarity as to the cost. Here's the other thing that I will say. Senator Peterson, I think, is within his right to talk about what happened in some other state. But again, I will caution this committee just to say, hey, if that's what happened there, that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what's going to happen here in Minnesota, and we have a great, robust system, and we have personnel who's able to articulate with some degree of certainty what they believe will be the cost that would be incurred should this piece of policy pass. So with that being said, I would hope that the committee is comfortable and that you would support this amendment, and we can go forward, I hope. And thank you so very much.
All right. Thank you. Anything further, committee?
I renew my motion.
All right. Mr. Chairman. So Senator Champion renews his motion to offer the A-12 amendment to Senate File 1904 with the changes incorporated on the effective dates. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed no?
No.
Motion carries. Anything further, members? Do I have any time?
No, that's great.
I was going to call for a vote on the bill. Senator Peterson.
Yeah, in that case, Mr. Chair, I should just make sure we're asking for a roll call on the final vote to the bill so we don't forget about that.
Very good. All right.
I'd like to offer the A-11 amendment.
Senator Peterson offers the A-11 amendment.
Mr. Chair, as that's being distributed, I can
Senator Peters.
Start to
sure.
Describe what's happening with this bill. Mr. Chair, members, what this does is it relates to electronic advertising device or electronic billboards that you see along the highways. Currently, right now, it's my understanding that the Minnesota Department of Transportation has a policy that's renewed every 5 years, I believe. And what this bill does is simply asking that we put the current MnDOT policy into law so that this industry has the ability to kind of plan around their investments. As you can imagine, a billboard in general is very expensive to build in terms of that real estate transaction, and then add on top of it the electronic aspect of it, which consumers seem to be responding to because there is a number of these that are going up and have a significant expense. So what this does is just put the current MnDOT policy in regarding these electronic billboards or the advertising devices into law so that industry has the ability to plan around the construction of these structures.
So, Senator Peterson, does this have fiscal implications? I thought we had talked, and thank you for mentioning this to me yesterday. I thought we had discussed maybe adding this to Senate File 1647, the policy bill.
Mr. Chair, that's a great question. I can certainly do that. I just see that it was written up to 1904. Yeah. I may not have made that clear. I did not make that clear to staff, quite frankly. So it's not my understanding that there is a fiscal note, so I'm happy to hold off on this,
okay.
Withdraw this.
Great.
If,
okay. Senator, yeah, we'll do that. And I don't think we need to do a
Mr.
whole
Chairman?
Revision. Senator Rest.
May I just ask a question?
Yeah, absolutely. Senator Rest.
Senator Peterson, is this policy current? Two questions. Is this policy currently in the rules from MnDOT, or is it just an understood policy, number one? And secondly, does the industry itself support your language?
Mr. Chair and Senator Rest, my understanding is that this is the current policy that MnDOT reviews every 5 years, and we'd probably need to take some testimony on that from that to clarify. And the answer to your second question is yes, the industry does support it.
So right. Mr. Chairman and Senator Peterson,
Senator.
Testimony could come on the policy bill, but
yeah. Yep.
But I just clarify that for myself, and I support your.
Okay, great, very good. All right, I appreciate it, Senator Peterson, and we'll just, I don't think we need to have it redrafted or anything. We'll just take it as is and then add it to Senate File 1647. Thank you for that. Actually, I have a couple of technical amendments, if I could offer those. So, Senator Kent.
Senator Dibble.
I'll offer the A-17 amendment.
Senator Dibble offers the A-17.
And then, can you help me play on A-17?
Sorry.
Thought I'd get to them before I forgot about them. And these, I believe, members, are a function of some brief conversations we had last night after a committee between the Met Council and the county's Transit Improvement Board, just to make sure that what the uses of the sales tax in the metro area are for and who who's programming those dollars, et cetera. So Ms. Berezovsky, if you could help me explain. I kind of know, but she knows better, so it's better for her to...
Mr. Chair and members, these are really technical changes to the Section 4, which begins at 27.10. And this is the existing quarter cent sales tax that's administered by CTIB. These were technical suggestions made by CTIB to just make the new language work a little bit better. So, for example, the new language at 27.14 to 27.16 that caps the grant for capital improvements to transitways at the amount that remains after federal and county contributions is being moved down to Clause 3 that starts at 27.19 because that's really where it belongs. That's transitway construction. And Clause 1 is transitway vehicles, basically, and those kinds of capital improvements. So we moved the cap down to Clause 3. There was, on 27.28, there's a statutory reference that really doesn't belong there anymore, I think, in the various iterations of this language. It was a holdover from a previous version, so we're deleting that statutory reference. So that's what the amendment accomplishes.
Senator Dibble?
Okay, thanks. Sounds great.
Members, any questions? Seeing none, all those in favor of the A-17 say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
And then, Madam Chair, I have another amendment, the A-20.
Senator Dibble offers the A-20.
And another set of technical fixes. This is to the active transportation, the bike ped stuff, some of the work of Senator Peterson's. Just doing a little fix-up there as well. Ms. Berezovsky.
Ms. Berezovsky. Madam Chair and members, this accomplishes really two things. And the language is in different places in the bill. And the part of the concern was that there was some overlap among the various references to active transportation programs throughout the bill. So what these changes would accomplish are, first of all, to let me explain first. Okay, the money that under the active transportation program language, the money that would go to the metro area is going to come from the sales tax, the metro sales tax. So the problem is Carver and Scott don't participate in that new metro sales tax. So the issue was that they would be left out if there's a program for five counties and a program for greater Minnesota. So statutory references and such were switched around so that those two counties would be considered greater Minnesota for the purposes of participating in these active transportation grant programs. And then the other change simply deletes, and that's on page 73. There is the Greater Minnesota program that is administered by MnDOT had some language, has some language that begins at 73.24 that requires MnDOT to create a grant program and to establish criteria for grant awards, and that was thought to duplicate language that was in Senator Peterson's active transportation program language. So that's all being eliminated from 73.24 to 73.34. Those are the two changes that this amendment accomplishes.
Senator Dibble?
Sounds good.
Members, any questions on the A20?
And Madam Chair, I just wanted to be sure that Senator Peterson is comfortable with some of his work.
Senator
yes.
Peterson?
Yep, Mr. Chair, that's fine.
All right. All right.
Okay. Seeing no additional questions or comments on the A20, all those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
All right. Further amendments or questions? Senator Giffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have the A16 amendment. I also have a handout, and I do have two testifiers.
All right.
Mr. Chair, I did give you a copy. So hopefully
yes.
That gave you a little bit of a...
Yes, I have it here.
Okay.
All right. Go ahead, Senator Kiffmeyer, as it comes around.
All right. And if I could have Mr. Walsh.
Yeah, if members are comfortable, rather than waiting for amendments to land in front of you, we'll have members offering them, start to speak to them before they're actually in front of your eyeballs. Just we've got to keep things moving here. So, Senator Kiffmeyer, thanks.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Walsh. Okay, there he is. Okay.
All right. Welcome to the committee.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'll just quickly, I just
Senator
want
Kiffmeyer.
To expedite things,
sure.
Get them up to the table. But the particular language here is about the Hugo Short Line Railroad. And they had an emergency repair needed this spring to keep it functioning. And it's between White Bear Lake and Hugo. Mm-hmm. They would cover the immediate urgency required repairs to continue the active service but basically this is so that they can have time to deal with a better fix. They're just got kind of a crunch this spring. So, Mr. Walsh, if you could go ahead and testify to this.
Mr. Walsh, please introduce yourself for the record and then proceed.
Good morning. I'm John Walsh, Chief Mechanical Officer, Cars and Signals, and Co-Director Operations.
Mr. Walsh, can you pull the microphone closer to you? Thanks.
Good morning. I'm John Walsh, Chief Mechanical Officer, Cars and Signals, Co-Director of Operations for Minnesota Commercial Railway, operator of the rail line that serves Hugo, Minnesota. The appropriation we are requesting is emergency funding for the temporary track repairs to allow continued safe movement of originating and terminating traffic to four of our key rail customers located in the city of Hugo. The city, these major employers, and our railroad have been working jointly in actively seeking funding for permanent repairs of the track and surface. The appropriation will fund a temporary one-year fix to 6.5 miles of track to meet required safety standards for continued operation, while we continue to work on securing funding for needed to make permanent repairs. Without these immediate repairs, approximately 500 employees' jobs will be at risk. The companies affected estimate that the end of rail service will more than double their cost of shipping, threatening their continued growth, profitability, and their ability to remain in the Hugo location. With serious economic consequences for their employees and the city itself, both today and in terms of its future economic development. For these reasons, we join the City of Hugo and our customers in asking for your support of Amendment Number A16, requesting one-time direct appropriation of $143,000 to enable these critical repairs to be completed while we work together toward a permanent solution. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Walsh. Questions, members?
Mr. Chair, I'd also like to have Scott Peterson with MnDOT, who can also maybe give additional information
sure.
about the project and its review by MnDOT.
Thank you. I have some questions for MnDOT as well. So, Senator or Mr. Peterson. I've done that before. Don't mean to insult you.
It looks
nice. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Scott Peterson from MnDOT. We have been talking to Representative Runbeck about this particular rail line as well, and so I know that our folks that run our rail service improvement program have been out there and talked to the shippers and the railroad, looked at the track, understand the need for some maintenance work to be done out there. What they've told me is that this amount is in the ballpark of what they think needs to be done. You know, typically when we do these kinds of things, they're a loan from the Mercy program, but in this case, the operator does not own the line, and the entity that owns the line, you know, is you know, they need to work out whether or not they're willing to take on a lien for I think a loan to do some permanent repairs. So I think this is how the railroad proposes to get by until they kind of get all that figured out.
Okay. Members, just to orient you a little bit here, so this would be rider language to the appropriations that we make for the purpose of freight rail. The base appropriation is $256,000, so this would leave about $100,000 behind for that. So, Mr. Peterson, what might occur should we only leave that amount, or what might not occur should we only leave that amount in our base appropriation for kind of freight purposes?
Mr. Chairman, I think that would leave our operating appropriation for the office short of what it needs. My understanding is that this general fund appropriation goes to pay for the people that work in our freight office. If I could suggest, if the committee is interested in making this appropriation, then maybe it could come from the Minnesota Rail Service Improvement Program funds instead as an alternative funding source, and that to alleviate that issue.
Just remind me, or maybe Ms. Boyd can remind me. We have a balance in the Minnesota, it's called Mercy, the Mercy Fund. I know we make loans typically out of that fund. Sometimes we make grants out of that fund. What's in there? What do we have in there?
Mr. Chair and committee, I don't have that information right now. We can find out. But
all right.
Balance sheet.
So I'm sympathetic to this. Oh, Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that currently there's a balance of about $3.4 million in the Mercy Fund.
All right.
We're in negotiations with four other entities for loans from the fund that take about $2 million of that.
All right.
So I think there's a bit of a balance left over, even if all those were funded.
Why don't I suggest this? Why don't we adopt this amendment and then figure out if we should pull some general fund dollars from the bottom line? We have a little bit in the bottom line in our target. Or just make an appropriation out of the Mercy Fund so that we don't short the freight rail office. But we'll figure it out. What was that? We'll just adopt this amendment and do a little bit more work on our way to finance.
Mr. Chairman.
All right.
Much appreciated.
All right. Very good. All right. Any other questions, members? All in favor of the A16 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I have the A21 amendment.
Senator Peterson offers the A21. Why don't you go ahead and start speaking to
members,
it?
Members, this is a technical change that fixes the effective date on public-private partnership language that I received from Ms. Berezovsky. You can see on the amendment it just changes. We insert the date of July 1st, 2016.
Okay. Very good. That's pretty straightforward. And also, I'll just say for the record, had a brief conversation with a representative of the Associated General Contractors who wanted to continue to work on some of the policy language around this, and I made that commitment. All in favor, I know it's not in front of you, but it's just a straightforward effective date change to July 1st, 2016. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Thank you.
All right. Anything further? Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to offer the A15 amendment.
Senator Kent offers the A15. Why don't you go ahead and start speaking to it while it comes around?
Mr. Chair and members, this amendment contains Senator Stumpf's Senate File 1225 that passed both the Environment and Energy and the State and Local Government Committees. It would provide for a study of the state takeover of the federal Section 404 wetlands permitting program currently administered by the Corps of Engineers, something that has long been contemplated and more recently explicitly permitted under current law. It mirrors what already has occurred in New Jersey and Michigan as the subject of study by several other states. It is supported by counties, businesses, and BWSR, the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
We call them Bowser.
Yes. And it is not opposed by any environmental organization. The bill does not reduce the protection of wetlands. It simply provides for a study of the impacts and what needs to occur if the state were to take over the Section 404 permitting program. No takeover would occur without further legislative action after Bowser and DNR reported on the study at the start of the 2017 session. While we think state takeover of the Section 404 permitting would eliminate substantial delays that construction projects now suffer and eliminate one of up to five layers of bureaucracy contractors, MnDOT, and local governments now have to navigate, the outcome of the study is not preordained. It's possible the study will find the takeover is not feasible or practical. Also, the takeover will not occur without the sign-off of the EPA that must be satisfied that the state would still meet the requirements of the Clean Water Act protecting wetlands. The funding for this, it's a $270,000 appropriation, would come from CASA, and the funding is not opposed by MnDOT and is supported by county engineers. And I believe we may have a testifier on this issue.
Okay, thank you. Senator Rest.
Mr. Chairman, do we have jurisdiction over Bowser in this committee? Why is this bill here rather than in Senator Tomasoni's division bill?
Senator Rest, because it was offered in Tomasoni's committee, but then after discussion, on which I serve, after discussion, because it comes out of highway user tax distribution funds, CASA administrative dollars, it's more appropriately here because it spends dollars out of this budget.
Okay, but I think it's weird.
Well, I thought it was weird that it would go in Tomasoni's committee. And the chair's
going to vote for this bill.
Mr. Carlson, do you have any light to shed? Oh, and I'm sorry, Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I saw Mr. Carlson there, but hopefully somebody from Bowser is here as mm-hmm. well to at least nod and say, yes, we're interested in going down this road.
All right.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Carlson.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm Keith Carlson with the Minnesota Intercounty Association. Just to give the committee a little history on the path of this bill was heard and passed by the Environment and Natural Resources Policy Committee and as well as the State and Local Government Committee. It was subsequently referred to the Finance Committee, and for reasons that I can't tell, it never got referred down to the Environmental and Economic Development Division and consequently was not heard as a separate bill in that committee. The subsequent actions are, as Senator Dibble indicated, it was offered as an amendment, but because the source of the funding for it was the CASA distribution within the Highway Tax Distribution Fund, they thought it was more appropriate to do it here. I'm not sure if anybody from Bowser is here, but Bowser is supportive of this amendment. As Senator Kent indicated, the ability for the state to go forward with the takeover of this program has been in the Wetlands Conservation Act right from its start, and it was made discretionary in 2012, but the agency will not go forward without full exploration of its impacts and without, frankly, funding for it. This will cost some money if the state chooses to go forward with it. The study is to identify all those parameters.
Thank you. Further questions, members? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Probably the current locally implemented Bowser I know this is a study to look at it, but probably of any entity locally that has a really good working relationship is Bowser. A lot of folks find that they want to do things environmentally sound, but Bowser helps them to know how to do it with expertise. I'm really concerned about this losing that really good local kind of implementation that is customized to each area, and you move that to the state. I know this is just a study, but we've seen this before. A study goes, and then the study gets implemented. So I find that the current situation works quite well, and I'm not really interested in spending money to study what I think already works well.
Senator Kipmeyer, I think this actually would accomplish those goals, but maybe Mr. Carlson can help.
Mr. Chairman, members, Senator Kipmeyer is correct that the current Wetlands Conservation Act is, in fact, locally administered with oversight by the Board of Water and Soil Resources. We are not intending on changing that relationship whatsoever. This is merely taking sort of the parallel federal permit and bringing it into state administration, hopefully within the same framework that exists currently for the Wetlands Conservation Act, with it actually being much of the work being done by the local entities. But again, this study is to identify the extent to which that can be done.
So, Senator Kipmeyer, I think this actually brings the federal process closer to the local process.
The opposite of what I might have thought. Okay,
great.
Thank you. That's very helpful.
Great. Senator Newman.
Mr. Chair, you know, it sounds like a good idea to me to bring the program closer to the state and away from the federal government. My question is, it says that the state is assuming administration of a permit program under the Federal Clean Water Act, under which the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers currently has jurisdiction. So my question is, does the state of Minnesota have the jurisdiction to assume this program from the federal government?
Senator Newman, I think that would need to be similar to how the EPA delegates authority to the states for a variety of processes and permitting. I think that would need to occur. And some states have accomplished this with this 404 permitting process.
And Mr. Chair, the only reason I ask the question is do we know the answer to that question before we spend the money to do the study?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, yes, this current federal law does permit the state, with essentially the sign-off of the Environmental Protection Agency, to take over administration of this program. As Senator Kent indicated, this has already occurred in the states of New Jersey and Michigan, and several other states are looking at this currently.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you. Anything further, members? All right. All in favor of the A15 amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Thank you. Anything further, members? Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair, I'd offer the A8 amendment, and I got a number of handouts here for
the
page.
Great. Senator Peterson offers the A8. Go ahead and start, yes, Senator Pearson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. The A8 amendment is an amendment that offers the most recent Better Trucks initiative, which is a bill that Senator Jensen was carrying and Representative McNamara in the House. You can see what this amendment does. It's pared back quite a bit. It is the same bill that Senator Jensen presented just a short time ago. I would draw your attention to really the second page is the expansion that we've heard testimony on in the past relating to actually, I guess first I'd draw your attention to line 2.7 on the amendment where it starts in 2.6, including but not limited to the oat hulls, other feedstock. So now you can understand why, you know, Senator Bach brought his bill forward, which this committee moved to the floor, you may recall, just a couple days ago, because I think he's concerned this bill is not going to pass. But as you heard in that committee, the arguments are exactly the same. So what this amendment does is it adds the materials that are used with highway construction in an effort to try and bring some cost savings back to that industry, similar to what the agricultural and logging industry, those types of savings that those industries experience right now for the consumer. There's a couple handouts coming out I want to draw your attention to. The first is the Better Trucks Initiative handout, which on the top, I think you've received that already, shows a map. This discussion came up when we were discussing Senator Bach's bill, where he pulled out the oat hulls from line 2.7, and as I stated earlier, this committee sent to the floor separate from this bill. But we referenced the Midwest in that discussion, and you can see on the map there, Minnesota is at 80,000 pounds, and all around us, the weight is significantly higher. And so the argument that Senator Bach made to remove the oat hulls from this provision stands true for road construction. Also, in the committee hearing that Senator Jensen facilitated, in her presentation of her bill, you heard testimony from one contractor from western Minnesota that talked about how one particular job they evaluated, if this provision were in place for road construction, would have saved 4.5% on that contract for those taxpayers. Another editorial that just came out this weekend that's also in your handout was in the St. Cloud Times, written by Jerry Lang from Knife River. Actually, they've done a similar evaluation, and they actually state publicly here that they would regularly save 5% and reduce the contracts that are issued for road construction. Knife River is a large road builder in central Minnesota as well. And so I'd ask you to review that. In addition, he also comments about how the bill does allow, we've heard some opposition from local governments, municipalities, townships, some cities and counties that they're opposed, but this bill also would allow them some flexibility to not allow those trucks on their roadways if they still would so choose to do that. The last thing I'd point out on the back of the Better Trucks Initiative handout as well, in the right-hand column, you can see the trade associations that are in support of this, as well as a number of local chambers of commerce that include Bemidji, Burnsville, Grand Rapids, Greater Mankato, Hibbing, Hastings, I-94, International Falls, Lakeville Area Chamber, Laurentian Chamber out of Virginia, Little Falls Chamber, Marshall, Northfield, St. Cloud, Wilmer, and Winona are all chambers of commerce that support this initiative. Actually, before it was significantly toned back, you may recall it was originally to include all freight, and now has been toned back, hopefully to earn your support, that would relate primarily to highway and building construction materials, which also includes demolition. Will be my final point before we hear from some testimony. I'm sure you'll also notice in this handout in regards to the editorial that showed up in the St. Cloud Times in the second to the last paragraph relating to the Metrodome in terms of demolition. An often cited example is the Metrodome demolition project in Minneapolis. Last year, roughly 50,000 members, 50,000 truckloads of recycled concrete were hauled out of downtown Minneapolis. And what this bill would do is, as pointed out in this article, if you'd imagine that if this truck weight increased by just 10%, which equals 5,000 fewer trucks on our highways, and that was just one project statewide, members, that's the type of congestion reduction that you're going to see by the implementation of this bill, as well as the savings in project costs. You're going to see significant savings in terms of getting vehicles off the road, and I would urge your support for the A8 amendment.
Members, comments, questions at this point? Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I think this is a really good amendment, and I want to thank Senator Peterson for bringing it forward, and especially the thorough study by MnDOT itself, our own Department of Administration, and the other resources that are presented here are very well done. And so I think it addresses some of the concerns, and I think some of the benefits that we have from the less congestion, less gas, and other things here are sound and good policy. So thank you, Senator Peterson, and I would support the A8 amendment on these weight issues for our trucks.
Senator Westrum.
Madam Chair, I too would speak in support of this amendment. Question, Senator Peterson. Can you refresh the committee and my memory on what happened? I think it was 2 years ago in the Senate. If I recall correctly, just to the north of my Senate district, up in the Frazee area, Senator Scoy's area, I think it's Region District 5, we've already allowed some overweight allowances. Can you refresh us on that? Am I recalling correctly?
Senator Peterson.
Yes, Madam Chair, Senator Westrum. This particular legislation was moving forward involving full freight or all freight, and installed in the Senate. And then basically what happened, Senator Scoy, at that point, the DOT district where he is from, at that point, was trying to recruit a distribution center for Menards into the city limits or area of Frazee, Minnesota. And, of course, you can see just by looking at the map on this handout the impact that that would have on a building materials distribution center like Menards. If you're not familiar with those, they include concrete block plants, they include truss plants, they include steel plants for manufacturing all types of metal products. And then, of course, the distribution center for all the products that they buy and resell. And so you can see by looking at the map the significance that that would have. And so Senator Scoy was successful in adding that provision to one DOD district in the state, which happens to surround Frazee and include his Senate district.
From Chair, Senator Peterson, my understanding is that district still has the higher weight allowances. Is that correct?
Madam Chair and Senator Western, that's correct.
Okay. And so, Madam Chair, members, my
Senator Western.
Oh, Mr. Chair, sorry. You switched on me.
Yeah, we switched.
Mr.
We
Chair.
Did I just play tricks on you, Senator Western?
That's all right. I do have a sense of humor, Mr. Chair. So. Mr. Chair and members and those watching in the audience, I really think this is a reasonable and a practical next step on an amendment. My Senate district borders both South and North Dakota. I cover three counties along the Dakota borders, and those states have higher weight limits on their trucks. I have worked with livestock haulers in my district over the years to try and get in improved weights with a triple axle trailer. They were some of the early introducers of three axle trailers. 15 years ago, that was not as common as we are seeing today to spread out the weight load, but allow a little heavier payload. And so my livestock haulers often told me they were really over the barrel, and either they had to haul cattle out to South Dakota, have a holding yard so that they could add more to their trailer, or really face tough economic competition in that sense that they couldn't haul as much as the Dakotas had allowed. And a lot of the packing plants that the western Minnesota livestock farmers would go to are in South Dakota or Nebraska. And so I use that as an illustration. Senator Peterson's done a nice job of recapping the kind of savings just in road building we could achieve. And if we're short of money, it isn't just about raising taxes or raising more revenue, but what can we do with the current revenues we have to make road building more cost-effective, more affordable. And so I really think this is a good step in achieving some of that reform that we also need when we talk about building highways and finding ways to bring the costs down and do more with less.
All right. Thank you. Anything further, members? Senator Carlson and then Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to know if we have any technical testimony from the department on this, and specifically on the study, too, because there are some things that I've heard from my local engineers, the county engineer and city engineer, that aren't addressed here. For instance, when we talk about multiple axles, one of the things that multiple axles do is they cause a lot more scrubbing on turns, which is very detrimental to even aggregate roads. But for wherever there's turns, especially 90-degree turns, there's a lot of stress that's put onto the roadways. And I would love to be able to support something like this, but we have done nothing but talking about how our infrastructure is under stress. And I think that anything that we do to add more stress to it is just kind of ignoring the problem that we have a lot of work to do on our roads, and we need some funding for that work to be done. So what I've gotten from my county commissioners are opposed to the heavier weights. My county engineer is opposed to the heavier weights, as well as the city people that I have talked to. So I guess the people that work on the roads, that build the roads, are the ones that I'll have to support.
I do know that Senator Peterson does have some testifiers, so we'll call those up in a moment, and then we'll see if MnDOT can respond to your statement. Senator Senjum.
Mr. Chair, my question would probably be of the MnDOT person. So
okay. Very, very good. So, Senator Peterson, you said you have some folks you'd like to invite to the table.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. I believe that Fred Corgan from the Aggregate and Ready Mix Association is here to testify.
Okay. Mr. Corgan.
And whoever else. Yeah.
All right, very good. Welcome.
Mr. Chair, thank you, committee members. I just want to thank you for the time you've devoted to this issue over the last 3 years now. This body did support this, the broader language in 2013. As Senator Peterson mentioned, this is a scaled-back version. We did hear from a number of communities, a number of areas across the state that they were worried about general freight being diverted onto trunk highways, and we hope this amendment makes them more comfortable that these trucks will only be traveled where they need. Perhaps most importantly, this proposal means fewer trucks on Minnesota roads, which is the most straightforward path to increase safety. The proposal has widespread support from many organizations in the agricultural community, construction industry, local chambers, and trade unions across the state. This body has passed the broader bill on the floor, and it is in the House bill that's being considered on the floor of the House today. So, again, thank you very much to all of you for the work you've done on this bill.
Thank you. Questions, members? All right. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Corrigan, in one of the editorials we have here, it talks about how the cities and counties and townships have the ability to limit this traffic on their roads with local control. or to collect a fee. Is that accurate from your perspective?
Mr. Corrigan.
Mr. Chair, Senator Peterson and maybe Senate Council can help us with this. There are, in 2008, there were two provisions passed to allow these permits to be issued to these trucks, one in the timber industry and one in the agricultural industry. The timber industry does not require local authority to, in their statute, in their piece of statute. We purposely built this amendment around the agriculture exemption, which does allow MnDOT, county, and local governments to all issue permits for these products or ban these trucks from their roads should they want to do that. And in a number of counties, they've used the permitting system to manage the roads that that they want these trucks to travel on and to clearly map where these trucks should go. Again, most of these trips are not just wandering around the state or around your cities. They're going to industrial areas. They're going to farm communities. They're going to construction projects. And that's all they can afford to do. They're going to go back and forth from those areas that would benefit most from these trucks.
Great. Thank you, Mr. Corrigan. Any questions? Any more questions? All right. Is there someone from the agency here who can respond to questions from MnDOT's perspective? Mr. Peterson, welcome. Favorite subject. All of our favorite subject. I was hoping we would spend a lot of time on heavy trucks today. It's my fondest wish when I got here this morning. Mr. Peterson.
Yeah. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Is there a question? Or?
Well, you heard Senator Carlson. I think the general gist of the question is, and something that I've been hearing as well, so I'll just kind of reframe it or add to it, which is we are hearing that MnDOT, while it has this study that it conducted a few years ago, might be wanting to do additional, take an exam, do some additional examination of questions that have come up since that time, scrubbing issue, other issues. I can't remember what they all are. But is that the case? I mean, we're getting kind of mixed messages out of MnDOT. Heavy trucks, or do we need to take a little more time and look at heavy trucks and their implications? So can you respond to that, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. With respect to the truck weight study that MnDOT conducted in 2005-2006, we had pavement and bridge engineers involved in that study. For pavement impacts of heavier trucks with more axles, which is the key, there are less weight per axle, and they found that there was less damage to the pavement from a truck that's loaded, as this bill provides, with the extra axles than from a five-axle 80,000-pound trailer. So it's all tied to the axle weight. The extent to which they looked at the scrubbing issue that Senator Carlson brought up, I can't really speak to, but I do know that overall they thought that there was actually a small net benefit to the pavement from the lower axle weights. With respect to other issues and whether we've explored whether to study this some more, there have been studies done since the MnDOT study was done and looked at issues that the MnDOT study did not examine. For example, the extent to which a higher center of gravity from a more heavily loaded truck might increase the tendency for a truck to roll over. I've read some studies that suggest that that is actually something that occurs, but there are not enough instances in their data set that they're looking at in order to draw any conclusions. So it's really kind of based on anecdotal evidence. So that remains out there. And I think in this committee before, we've talked about the federal truck weight study. My understanding is they're looking at a lot of issues, putting a lot of emphasis on, multiple trailers, doubles and triples. And I don't know to what extent they're actually looking at this, but in any event, that study is not yet available. So I don't think that MnDOT has really explored whether or not we should do any additional study. And I think one of the reasons for that is there's still the federal prohibition for trucks exceeding 80,000 pounds on five axles on the interstates. And the interstates continue to be one of the best places for freight movement because they're built to handle heavy loads and because of the safety features from the complete controlled access. So that, I hope, gives you a little more context for the conversation, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Carlson.
Yep. Mr. Chair and Mr. Peterson, now I've gotten direct contact from county engineers, more than one, who said that they disagree with what the study came out with. And I'm looking at the number of groups that were involved, and way down at the bottom it says County Engineers of Minnesota. But county engineers, and I don't have that flyer with at this meeting, but the county engineers have, as a group, come out against the heavier trucks. So evidently there isn't an agreement by the engineers. Plus, one of the people that talked to me said that that this is a problem for pavement, and he is a pavement engineer for MnDOT. So I guess I think there needs to be more information. I think there needs to be agreement so that the county engineers will actually agree with what the study, you know, the results of the study, because at this point they're the ones that still have to build the roads. And as you mentioned, the what happens is the heavier trucks are going to go on to local roads or more of the local roads because they can't go on the interstates. And that's a concern for me. And I guess there's another issue for me, slightly separate, is that how do you tell when a truck has the permit? I can't tell how heavy a load is when I look at it. You know, if it's aggregate, it's certainly a whole lot heavier than it is if it's milk, for instance. And I'm wondering, you know, should we be labeling like a license sticker or something? Because one of the issues that my county engineer said is that they have a very limited number of scales, and if they're going to do some enforcement, that they have to specifically deploy these scales and go out, and they have to pick a route to be able to enforce. And I know that they've done it, but it's very disruptive, and it costs a lot to do the enforcement. Plus, again, you can't tell that a truck has a permit or not. And it may have a permit, and you stop it and weigh it, and you find out that there is a permit. Or you may see a truck that you think is overweight, weigh it, and find out it does not have a permit. There's no way to find out whether this additional load is, you know, may be approved or may be authorized. And I guess that's an issue that I would like to see addressed, too.
Mr. Peterson, did you have a response?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Carlson, the issues with weight enforcement, I think, would be addressed to the Department of Public Safety, the State Patrol. We don't do the actual weight enforcement. I know that there are challenges with that, but I don't know to what extent, you know, the provisions in this amendment might affect that.
All right. Thank you. I had Senator Senjum, and then I'll go to Senator Peterson or Newman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
I need more coffee, maybe.
somewhat on the same subject, and I may find myself talking in circles here, which is probably not unusual. I'm told repeatedly by county engineers back home that, you know, don't do this because they can't go on the interstates anyway, and I guess we've established that's true. That was one of my questions. And since they can't go on the interstates, they're simply going to take the state highways, the county highways, and, in fact, our bridges on those routes aren't capable of taking these heavy weights. So, and I guess that's probably already happening, whether we like it or not, since they can't go on the interstate. So, I guess you can pick any state highway coming out of Wisconsin to Minnesota, and those trucks, heavy as they are, I guess they'd have to unload, I suppose. I'm talking to myself. I'm not so sure I really have a question. I'm just trying to understand this thing and how it works with this prohibition on the interstate.
So committee's for, we just kind of think out loud. It's cool.
Maybe I do have one question. Referencing footnote 4 on this document, I note that North Dakota does have a grandfather on their apparently interstates, but
the age of grandfathering is apparently over, and we could never achieve that in Minnesota. Is that correct?
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator St. John, that's correct. It only applied to states that had higher weight limits in effect at the time the federal limit went into effect.
Okay.
They're the only ones that can have the higher rates.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
All right. Senator Newman.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Peterson, I received a phone call yesterday from the sheriff in one of the counties that I represent. And he was neither for nor against the bill, but he was simply raising questions regarding public safety, accidents, things of that nature. And I noticed on the flyer on the backside of Better Trucks Initiative, the last two bullet points, one says MnDOT projects fewer crashes with these changes and says a truck's weight has no bearing on the severity of accidents. You know, and I can understand if we're going to have fewer trucks on the road, we're going to have fewer accidents. And I can understand if we have, for instance, more axles, maybe more braking power, actually reducing stopping distance. I would just like you to comment on those two points that MnDOT has expressed, fewer crashes and the truck weight has no bearing on the severity of accidents, so that I can put my local sheriff's mind at ease.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, you know, I don't remember offhand from the study if it addressed fewer or lower severity of crashes, but I do know that the study did find that with more axles, there's more braking power per pound of the truck, and so the stopping distances would be shorter. And in with reference to the number of crashes, the study found that there might be a slightly higher incidence of crashes, but that because the crash rate might go up marginally, but because there would be fewer trucks on the road, that than there otherwise would be, that the overall number of crashes would be lower.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman.
Mr. Peterson, why would the crash rate increase?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, you know,
you don't know.
I don't know that information straight off hand.
Fair enough. Thank you,
right.
Mr. Chair.
Very good. Anything further, members?
Yeah, Mr. Senator Chair, Peterson. Members, I would only add, I know there's been more concern raised about local attitudes towards this bill, and I just want to remind members that the locals can prevent these trucks from going on their roads. They just need to do that through their local elected officials. And then the only other thing I would add, it seems to me that I recall when we heard testimony from the counties on this before, they were opposed with no new revenue. Members, this bill, Senate File 1904, raises an enormous amount of revenue. Members, and if somebody from the county is here to either dispute or agree with that, but my recollection is that the counties would support this bill with new revenue, which certainly this bill is doing.
All right. Well, I know we've discussed this issue thoroughly. All right. Senator Kent just took a quick powder. I know she wanted to be sure to be able to vote on this as well. So unless there's nothing further, I know Senator Tomasoni is anxious to go start presenting his bill in finance, so we probably should get to a vote pretty soon here. Members, I'll just explain my vote. I'm going to be voting in opposition to this. I think in the time that this has been around this year, a lot of questions continue to be raised. I frankly would like the county engineers to be much more comfortable with this proposal. You know, some of the additional questions that have come up in the meantime around safety. We're still waiting for this magical federal study, you know, that everyone seems to think is going to part the seas and cause angels to sing from heaven and all clarity to descend on us on this question. And so let's get that MAP 21 study in hand as well. So people might be surprised by my vote in opposition because I'm generally in favor of this idea. Also, sorting out this interstate question is important to me as well. So with that, all in favor of the A8 Peterson Amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Motion does not prevail. Division. All right, a division. We'll check the chair's hearing. all in favor, please raise your hand. All right, all opposed, raise your hand.
Your hand's kind of up. Okay. Well, I'll put her down.
I think it went down by a couple.
Okay. With six yeses and eight noes, the motion does not prevail.
Mr. Chair.
I suspect, members, this isn't the last we've heard of this subject. I know the other body has something similar in their bill. Senator Peterson. Yeah,
Mr. Chair, to that point, since you did change your opinion on this in the last couple weeks, I was just interested in trying to get your insight in terms of, just recently we had Senator Bach's bill that related to the oat hauls, which specifically does this. And now I clearly understand why Senator Bach wanted to pull that particular product that is actually named in Senator Jensen's bill here. Why do you think that from that perspective that it should be allowed for oat hauls and not for construction highway materials?
Senator Peterson, I viewed Senator Bach's bill as a bit of a technical clarification having to do with ag commodities that we already have seen fit to support. And also I was persuaded by the argument that there was a de minimis number of trucks that would be of these kinds of heavier trucks that would be used for this purpose. Since that time, the Department of Transportation has indicated that, in fact, they think Senator Bach's bill is not necessary, that oat hauls actually are captured by the present ag commodity definitions. We probably won't even see Senator Bach's bill again. They'll just be kind of swept and kind of deemed as already allowable. Oh, excuse me. Restatement of the vote total for the record. It was a seven yeses and eight noes.
Great. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Senator Peterson. All right. Moving on. Any further amendments, members? Senator Jensen, and then we'll go to Senator Westrom.
I have the A-19 amendment.
Senator Jensen has the A-19 amendment. Senator Jensen, go ahead and start explaining it.
This amendment deals with the Quarters of Commerce language, and it's real small. It just adds the ability for the use of the money for land acquisition on the Quarters of Commerce projects.
All right. Very straightforward. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just wondering what this does to the overall ability to fund projects in general by expanding land acquisition. So maybe, Senator Jensen, you could explain this a little bit more.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. When this deals more with the ability for the project to be selected in the Quarters of Commerce selection process, because in order to be considered competitive, you have to be have certain things done already. So we want to change that by that particular part by saying that some of this money, when you get it through the corridors of commerce, currently you cannot use that money because it's bonding money. You can only use it for construction. So if you don't have land acquisition, you're not going to be able to do the construction. So this brings in more projects with this language so that you can utilize some of that funding for land acquisition land acquisition to continue the project so you can be competitive in the selection process.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That is exactly the concern. I think it would be important to recognize that, but maybe I could have a conversation with you about this, Senator Jensen. I have an idea, but not developed enough for right now.
Okay.
Senator Jensen.
Thank you, Senator Kiffmeyer. And just so you know, the conversations that I've had with the department in the last 3 years, that there's not very many projects left out there after we did some of the stimulus money that we received that have the things done to be considered shovel-ready. We don't have those projects out there anymore. So we're limited with what we're going to be able to use the Corridors of Commerce money for, even if we get money in the Corridors of Commerce, if we don't put in some of this kind of language.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think it would be important, though, that those projects that do already have the necessary land purchased and are ready to go should have a priority basis, because that reduces the cost overall to get projects done. So that is kind of where my direction is going, not that we pile in a bunch more of projects when those who have purchased land and have prepared then get lumped in and have their projects at risk. Maybe you'd be open to considering that?
Senator Cooper, I'd have to see what you're you're actually suggesting.
That's exactly it. I thought I would mention it.
So, for my part, I think you're both on a good path. You raise some valid points, but Senator Jensen also raises a good point that, you know, sometimes some of these projects get stymied because of this inhibition. So,
Mr. Chair, could I ask Ms. Bereshofsky if she sees any way that we can amend this while we're here in the committee and it's fresh in our minds to accomplish that goal?
Did you catch the gist of the conversation? Sorry. Can you restate your goal, Senator Kiffmeyer?
I know. A lot of things are going on, Ms. Bereshofsky. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The language here is expending an amount necessary for land acquisition on corridors of commerce projects. And what I would like to do is that those projects who already have the land acquired for the project would have some priority, that they would be ready to go, and could in the selection process, they would have. But I just can't see an easy way to do it right now.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, could I take a minute to look at the statute that creates the program? Because maybe the change would be more logical in there, since it has to do with project selection rather than, if I'm understanding your point correctly, it has to do with project selection, not funding, as this language is about the funding, not the selection.
And Senator Jensen.
And Mr. Chair, my understanding of the selection process that was put into place through rules of the program, that's already part of that process, which is where the problem lies. So there's still other things other than land acquisition that they would have to have done in order to be considered competitive for that process that aren't included in this. This just indicates the land acquisition portion. You know, there's EIS studies. There's all kinds of things that you can't use bonding money for that they would have to have done.
Mr. Peterson, can you shed a little light? I'm guessing you have the Corridors of Commerce selection criteria and rules memorized, right? So Mr. Peterson, do you get the gist of the inquiry? Trying to expand the allowable uses for land acquisition. Senator Kiffmeyer is concerned that would then detract from the ability to move forward on new projects, so giving priority to those projects that already have the land acquisition in hand. Mr. Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Senator Kiffmeyer, the amendment actually allows the department to spend funds from its state road construction appropriation, which is separate from the money that's appropriated to the Corridors of Commerce program itself. So it doesn't really diminish the amount of funds that are available for the Corridors of Commerce program.
Okay.
The way I read it. And so, and then with respect to the criteria, changing it, just want to back up a little bit. So the Corridors of Commerce program has really only been funded one time, to the extent that we could actually get some projects done. And that was $300 million worth of bonds that were passed. I think a couple years ago. And then there was $31.5 million more that was appropriated last year, and that was some of that money was cash, and if not all of it, and so that was used for some right-of-way acquisition. So I only bring that up to point out that the criteria for the first round of project selection for Corridors of Commerce was weighted towards projects that were ready to go, just because we knew that there was there were a lot of projects out there that were ready for the money, and we wanted to get stuff done as quickly as possible. So the criteria that's actually in statute that identifies the projects that are eligible for the funding doesn't necessarily prioritize readiness. It was more of kind of a department decision, if you will, to emphasize the readiness, because of the it just seemed like it was the most reasonable thing to do was to try to get these projects done that already had a lot invested in them and get them ready to go. And I think it was pointed out earlier, I don't remember who pointed out, that there weren't that many other projects currently that have that same level of readiness. And I think that that is true. And so if the Corridors of Commerce program does get additional funding, you know, we'll be looking for ways to move these projects towards construction. And I'm not sure how much effort that will take to do that.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Wow, you have eyes in the top of your... helpful. Thank you. Mr. Peterson, so since it's not in statute, on this particular land acquisition, and what I had talked about with Ms. Barashovsky was whether, to me, my concern is that those that are, though they may not be as many, I think they should be given, because I think this is a more immediate, meeting those immediate needs. And so that is the discussion we're having right now and how to accomplish that. And Ms. Barashovsky was going to review current criteria, but it's been helpful to know that there isn't, but it just makes common sense that you would do that. So that is the broader discussion, and I appreciate that. And we'll maybe see if Ms. Barashovsky can give us some language that would help us to maybe accomplish that, because I think it is in the best interest of, and I think in general the intent to have those projects that are ready to go get out the door quickly.
Ms. Berzowski, do you have a suggestion?
Mr. Chair and Senators, I would suggest amending statute in 161.088 subdivision 5, which is project selection process and criteria for this Corridors of Commerce program, and under paragraph C, which begins, project evaluation and prioritization must be performed on the basis of objective criteria, which must include, and then there are seven criteria listed, and I would propose then to add an eighth, the extent to which land has been acquired for the project.
Senator Kiffmeyer, does that work for you?
Yes, that would be okay.
All right. Senator Jensen, what do you think of that?
As long as there, Mr. Chair, as long as we are giving the authority for the commissioner to use money to purchase land, then I'm fine with that.
All right, very good. So, Senator Jensen, would you just like to incorporate that language suggestion into your A19?
That's fine.
All right, very good. Any other questions on the amendment? Senator Osmick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Senator Jensen, does your amendment impact the whether positively or negatively the ability to seize land to use condemnation processes for the state to be able to get more access to land? Does this amendment deal with any of those mechanics?
Senator Jensen.
I guess I would have to ask counsel because I'm not aware or familiar with the statute that you're referring to.
Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, Senator Osmek, no, I don't think this would affect the MnDOT ability to exercise eminent domain to acquire property. That costs money, for one thing, so I guess you could say that it is included in this language or it's contemplated by this language as one means of acquisition. But no, it shouldn't affect the department's ability to condemn property.
Great. Thank you. Anything further on the A-19 amendment? All right. All those in favor say aye.
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 Opposed, no. Motion carries. I should say the A-19 as modified amendment. Very good. Anything else? Oh, I'm sorry. Senator Westrom, we're going to go to you next.
Mr. Chair, I've got two amendments, and if I could ask staff, I think it's A-5. I'd like to do the unconventional.
That's A-5.
Vehicles amendment first. Is that the A-5?
All right, that is the A-5. Yeah.
Mr. Chair, I'd move the A-5 amendment.
Senator Westrom moves the A-5 amendment.
Mr. Chair and members, this is the bill that we had heard in committee. Senator Tomasoni spoke about it as a co-author with me, and others talked about it. Senator Franson's, turns out I think it's her husband's uncle or somebody that had sent us testimony. But, Mr. Chair, this would work with getting an unconventional license for mini trucks, or as we've gotten to know them. I had sent out, included a picture in the last test committee testimony, and this is mimics what South and North Dakota have done with their language to allow these vehicles that would be able to be on our state roads. And I would just urge our adoption of this smaller vehicle in the sense of it's not a big pickup, it's not a big car, but it certainly is bigger in many cases than some of the small cars that you might even see on the downtown Twin Cities here or driving on our roads. Certainly we allow motorcycles on our roads and to be licensed horse and buggy in my areas and other areas in rural Minnesota is a fairly common sight, and as well as biking and walking on our highways. Members, I would ask you to support this. Farmers have a need and an interest and a use for this. Resort owners or folks that buzz back and forth to different venues or businesses that they might have. And so I think it really would be time to allow this option for those that are interested in buying one of these. And a current ability to not license them and kind of use them as a practical a part of your life stymies the interest in being able to buy them. And Senator Franson's husband's relative kind of would attest to that. And in the letter that they submitted to us, the interest, it really is a problem when they can't get these licensed to have a big enough market. And so I would ask for your deep thought and consideration in allowing this and having our department just go ahead and work with getting something done for this industry and this those that are interested in this. I also remind you that all the reports I've heard and read, this is a high mileage vehicle. It's not it's a very efficient on gas and things like that. And so there's just a lot of reasons.
Just got me on that one.
Makes sense.
All right.
So
thanks.
With that, Mr. Chair, I would ask members to support
All right.
This.
Thanks. The A-5. Questions, members? I know Senator Franzen did want to get back into the room to vote on this. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I would urge your support of this. In fact, Senator Western, I tried to get a picture of this vehicle for you, but I could not because I saw the Department of Admin operating one of these right out here on Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Boulevard between the two surface lots that appeared to have turn signals, headlights. But
unlicensed, Mr. Chair.
But, right. That's what's going to be citizens my arrest. Point. and so, you know, members, our own state agencies are using these vehicles, and it certainly is appropriate to allow individual citizens to use these as well. So, and I will add that it appeared the vehicle appeared to be brand new, actually. So.
All right. I saw another hand. Senator Osmick.
Mr. Chair, can we send a page to get Senator Tomasoni? I think he's probably very interested in this amendment.
He's presenting his bill.
Oh, he's presenting his bill in finance. We can send word and we can make it his choice. Just someone let him know. And we'll find out if he's willing to suspend. Other questions? Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, in deference to Senator Tomasoni, I'd be willing to withdraw my amendment and do it a little bit later here. I have another amendment I'd
okay.
like to talk about.
All right. So, Senator Western withdraws the A5. And what is the...
Mr. Chairman, the A6 amendment I would move.
Senator Westrom offers the A6. And you can go ahead and start speaking.
Mr. Chair, members, the A6 amendment deals with financing of our road and road construction and infrastructure. I've heard different proposals talked about around here, and this is where the idea came from for me, and then I started looking into it a little bit further. But what this would do is exempt sales tax from being collected on construction materials for road building. And what's one point I want to make make so everybody understands this, because the more you think about this, it is a stronger reason why we should really do this and exempt the sales tax on the items that our road contractors have to buy to build our roads and infrastructure for the state. And it's related to the gas tax. The gas tax is dedicated towards road construction and road building, per the Constitution. So when we fill gas in our gas tank, and that 28.5 cents a gallon is collected, that is to be dedicated towards road construction. Well, when the state requires our contractors to pay sales tax on the first 7%, 6.875% of their materials, that 6.875% is being shifted right over to the general fund for the state of Minnesota, skirting the intent of the gas tax, which is supposed to be constitutionally dedicated towards road construction. Now, you could play this scenario out, and it would be a way the state could get around putting any gas tax dollars into road construction if they wanted to. And so for the illustration, let's just say the state decided we had a shortfall and we wanted to put 100% sales tax on road construction materials and siphon that much more money out of the gas tax account. I think all of us would be outraged and say that perverts the intent. You can't do that. But for the purposes of illustrating my point, think about what I just said. So we as government can put a sales tax on the products that we're asking contractors to build our roads with and shift that over to the general fund, taking it out of the gas tax, which is supposed to be dedicated to highway construction. And so, members, I urge your support of this exemption. It is a common sense way to reform our current system, use dollars that are supposed to be for road construction for that purpose. And the best estimate we were able to get on a fiscal note was about $23 million a year under this current scenario. At $1 million a mile, and my county engineers, who the chair was giving great deference to a couple amendments ago, tell me they can build lane miles for about $750,000 a mile. MnDOT tells me it's about $1 million a mile. So somewhere in between there, there's 23 to 30 more miles we could build of roads in our state by just doing this common sense amendment in exempting sales tax for our road contractors when they bid and leaving the dollars in the gas tax account rather than shifting it and over to the general fund by collecting sales tax. I'd urge your support.
Senator Westrom, I don't disagree with you in principle. Unfortunately, we don't have the general fund resources in the form of a target to support this amendment. The other question I have, Senator Westrom, is how do we know that, particularly if these are contractors and subcontractors, private entities, that their bids would come down, you know, dollar for dollar, the amount of sales tax that they would forego? I just don't know how we would lock that in. I kind of get it when it comes to exempting sales tax paid by local units of government because they're paying directly for the corresponding public services that they would then purchase because they're themselves not paying. For example, we have the Kunin provision in our bill. So for those two reasons, well, first of all, I mean we just simply don't have the general fund target to support this amendment. I don't think we have to balance going out of here, but we have to balance going out of finance, and so this wouldn't, unless we shift all of our target into this amendment, and not pay for anything else, we just don't have the general fund target to support this. But I like I said, I completely agree with you in principle. It does not make sense for the Trunk Highway Fund to subsidize the general fund, and so it's definitely a worthy discussion. Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, I suppose we could come up with some language that would somehow instruct contractors to include the sales tax and then deduct that from their bid. I mean, there could be a complicated formula, and maybe not that complicated. Right now, their current bids are that. You could set up a process that they bid them that way, and then so at the bid opening, you could say, surprise, you don't have to pay sales tax, so we're going to deduct this much from your bid because we know that. And so I say that. I mean, I think you legitimately could figure that out. But in the marketplace, as long as we've got competition going with our contractors, I'm familiar with contractors. I've talked to several of them. I know how they go about putting their bids together, and it's very sophisticated. Over Easter, we were visiting my wife's family's my brother-in-law, and he's an excavator, and he was putting some bids together. And he's got his line items. He goes down his costs. He adds them all in, gets to the bottom, and he adds up his total. And so, Mr. Chair, it would be a cost they don't have to include on their bids. And so from that standpoint, we would get it if we've got competition and have multiple bids coming in on projects because they aren't going to let that competitor deduct it and not deduct it themselves. But to your question, I think we could get more sophisticated in making sure that it gets deducted. But by not requiring it would be a good first step.
Well, Senator West, I'm just reminded of in times past, we gave a fairly significant property tax reduction to residential rental property, and guess what? And the rallying cry was all these poor renters and what they're being forced, in terms of pass-through property tax that they have to pay, and no one's rent went down. The landlords just pocketed those dollars, or the airlines when they, enacted the fuel tax surcharge, and then aviation fuel went down, and guess what? They never correspondingly lowered their ticket prices. They just pocketed that delta, no pun intended, that difference.
So, Mr. Chair, we
could come up with a mechanism. I agree. It doesn't alter the fact that we don't have the target to support this amendment.
So Mr. Chair,
Mr. Chairman,
it's Mr. kind of the same concept of sales tax exemptions for our cities. I mean, we didn't require them to lower their property tax levies, and some chose not to. But some of us maybe didn't realize they didn't raise their levy as much as they would have otherwise. And so to your anecdotal evidence, just because rents perhaps didn't go down or didn't go up. They may not have gone up as much as they would have if the property taxes would have stayed the same. So, but I do think we could come up with it.
Right. Senator Kiffmeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And Senator Westrum, I know you can't always see if there's another member that wants to help you out across the table. So I apologize if I was kind of interrupting, but I want to let you know. I want to support you in this regard. But, Mr. Chairman, I think sometimes in listening to that, maybe Ms. Barashofsky can come up with something a little bit different, that we do have opportunities, though, to dedicate sales tax to a specified account rather than an exemption, more so that a dedication methodology by which, because in the biennial budget submission in the Section 6 up here, language, the calculation can be there, and I would agree with Senator Westrum in those kinds of calculations, but I think that that might be another kind of a way of accomplishing the same thing without adding an exemption that might be harder to track.
Is that a suggestion, a question, an amendment?
Yes, it was exactly that. Because sometimes, Mr. Chairman, I don't know for sure if Ms. Barashofsky can do these things or if she needs more time.
Mr. Chair, yes. Senator Kiffmeyer, I guess I'd like to just think about that for a little bit. I'm not – nothing is springing to mind that I could offer immediately.
Okay, well, I'm glad to hear, Mr. Chairman, that the principle, and it's more a method of how we accomplish it, and yes, then we are still with the general fund. But, Mr. Chairman, if this is a dedicated situation, does that change the general fund situation at all?
Senator Kiffmeyer, well, yeah, that does not. It is a transfer. I mean, you know, subtracting from the general fund, and so we have to pay for it, and it would need to be a you know, we'd have to have the target, you know, the allocation in our budget division to spend those dollars in that amount, and we just don't. Yeah,
Mr. Chair.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I know that in a committee we're in a little different situation. I think you always want to honor those targets, and this is a bigger amount. But I'll just work with Ms. Barashofsky as we go forward, maybe right, to come up with a method that does, and in a way that we can accomplish it, because I think 23 miles is 23 miles right now, and that would be a good thing. Thereabouts, yeah, anyway.
Great. Senator Westrum.
Well, Mr. Chair, Senator Kiffmeyer, in your comments, Mr. Chair, are sparking a thought. And if there's a willingness to look at this a little further, maybe to even keep some life in this idea, I would suggest and be willing to put this out 2 years, which does get past the balanced issue, but it forces the discussion or brings the discussion along with us. And so I'm just asking, would you be more amenable if we maybe put an effective date two years out, 3 years out?
Senator Westrum, it would. We do also have to account for our tails targets, so it would need to be 4 years out.
Well, let's go four. Do I hear four or five, Mr. Chair?
Four. Yeah.
So I would be amenable to setting this out 4 years, because I think it really is a legitimate policy. And, Mr. Chair, I hadn't really thought of it this in depth in my years here until I started hearing these ideas from different folks and thinking, you know what? This is actually siphoning dedicated gas tax money right into the general fund. So, anyways, Mr. Chair, if you'd be amenable to that, I'd ask counsel to put the effective date out 4 years.
Senator Westrum, it's very tempting. I'll leave it to the committee to decide. I mean, your point is well taken. This is a subsidy of the general fund with trunk highway dollars. There's no doubt about that. I do think more work would need to be done to make sure that those sales taxes that contractors forego aren't simply somehow or another absorbed into their bid and then pocketed as profit, basically. So it would definitely need some more work.
We'd have 4 years to do that, Mr. Chair.
Right.
So, Mr. Chair, for the purpose of my amendment, maybe I could ask staff to just make the correct oral amendment, and I would ask that we just put the effective date 4 years out before we vote on it.
And, Senator Westrom, I will say this. I don't think there is any harm to the discussion, and we certainly will hear. If this amendment goes on, we will certainly gain the perspective of the tax committee and the tax chair. We do have a member of a tax subcommittee. I wonder if Senator Rest has an opinion on this idea. Well, maybe we'll find out with her vote.
I do have an opinion.
Will we find out with your vote, or do you want to comment ahead of time?
I don't want to comment.
All right. Very good. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, Senator Westrom, did you want that biennial budget submission to also be put out for 4 years, or perhaps modified to be just an informational exchange in the meantime, so that MnDOT could do that, could figure out in terms of those lump sum contracts how much is related to sales tax, or do you want the whole thing out 4 years?
I'd be open to your suggestion. Probably put the whole thing out 4 years.
Okay, then, Mr. Chair and Senator Westrom, after 1.12, insert effective date. This section is effective July 1, 2019. And on 2.27, change or delete 2015 and insert 2019.
Great. Senator Westrom will incorporate those changes into the A6 amendment. Any further discussion, members? Right. All in favor of the A6, say aye.
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 Opposed, no?
No.
Motion carries. All right. Any further, members? Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair and members, I'd offer the A7 amendment.
Senator Peterson offers the A7. Senator Peterson, why don't you go ahead and start describing it?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is an amendment I'm carrying on behalf of a colleague, Senator Rosen. This is the breast cancer awareness plate.
So it begins.
Or continues.
I warned you last year of the golf plates.
Why don't we just
Amend this. Any nonprofit who wants a plate can have one. I editorialize. Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Senator Rosen has a community, the city of Janesville, Minnesota, that she serves in her district, who has a strong desire to have this option available among other folks around the state. This particular community has a community-wide effort and fundraising event around this this issue that involves the entire community of Janesville and brings a number of people in around this issue to raise money and awareness. And so she's asked me to present this on her behalf, and as Senator Dibble alluded to, I don't think it'll be the last that you hear about it in regards to, from Senator Rosen as we move forward. The only thing that I see is that on line 1.9, I probably need to make an oral amendment to change $10 to $12.50. Is that correct, Mr. Chair, Ms. Berezovsky?
Senator Peterson, yeah, that would be correct to be consistent with our goals of avoiding the subsidy of the Trunk Highway Fund with driver and vehicle services dollars, so, or vice versa.
So, Mr. Chair, to that point, then, with the increase in the price there, too, that's what I understood last night, that this was is it your position at this point that this pays for the cost, the entire cost?
Senator Peterson, yes.
Okay. Members?
Oh, Senator Peterson, no. I'm told. Ms. Boyd.
Mr. Chair and Senator Peterson, with any plate fee, we sort of see a standard fiscal note that what it doesn't cover are the design costs for the plate, which are picked up by the department, and that's a fairly small. It's usually $500 to $1,000, but that comes off the bottom line of the operating account.
All right, Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'll be sure to communicate that to Senator Rosen. I think that is something she is willing to try and fix if this were to go on or as she works on this issue as it moves forward. So, members, I urge your support. It would allow Minnesotans to purchase a breast cancer awareness plate when they go to renew their license plates.
So members, just to restate for the record, I think most are aware that I view license plates as having a fairly specific public safety function, and other people have a different perspective and think they can be used for multiple purposes, obviously because we have quite a few plates. And I think we're going to have a rapid proliferation of these charitable plates from this point on, which I think is unfortunate because I think it's going to clutter up the plates and make them less usable for their original purpose and function. So I will register my standard opposition to plates for this purpose. I think we had seen fit to do the military plates, the college and university plates, and some of the public purpose, environmental and sesquicentennial. We pretty much held off on every 501c3 charitable entity until the PGA came in. You know, we've had the motorcycle folks have tried on occasion, and the Red Cross have tried on occasion. But I think once we open this door, it's wide open. We're going to see literally thousands of different kinds of plates from this point on if we continue down this path. That may be a good thing in some people's minds. I think it's a bad thing. So it's a valid, everyone has a valid perspective on that, and I respect everyone who has a different perspective. Senator Reiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I was going to essentially make the same comments. Not supportive of specialty plates. Haven't voted for them in the past. Won't be today.
All right. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, and I feel exactly the same way. I think we've all sponsored a plate. Some of the motorcycle ones, the veterans ones, I've also sponsored. But this one I have a couple of other questions on. For instance, pink has been somewhat of a controversy because there is a pink color that is registered by the Komen Foundation. And I think they've actually sued users of a pink because they have not gotten authorization to use that pink. And that I would be concerned of. And then also I see on line 1.12, it says that you have to contribute to a specific charity. Now, I don't know that we've done that before in statute, and do we do that? And I guess that's... evidently you're issued the plate because you donated to that charity. So I guess I have those two questions, and I guess having a recent experience with this particular illness, I'm on the fence again because I don't really support, especially the plates that are difficult to read. And we're getting more and more of those that are difficult to read. So I'm hoping that there's some way that if we do allow these, that they fit all of those particular criteria of being able to be used, and also that the design is has better standards of readability than we presently have.
All right. Thank you. Senator Peterson, did you want to respond to any of the points that Senator Carlson made? Okay. I do know that I can answer the specific designation to a specific charitable entity. At least was the practice of PGA, of course. I don't know about others, but I think that has been done, at least in that instance. those dollars raised go specifically to some PGA thing that they do, teaching kids how to golf or something like that. Anything further, members? All right. Did you have anyone you wanted? No, just no testifiers? Okay. All in favor of the A7, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no?
No. Division.
Motion does not prevail, and then we'll go. I have to indulge. All, right. All in favor, Senator Westrom?
Mr. Chair, I'd bring back the A5 amendment.
We need to take a hand count. So all in favor of the A7 amendment, raise your hand.
Cancer awareness.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Let me go with that.
One
extra
here.
Okay. Sorry. Raise it high. All right. Roll your chair. All opposed, raise your hand. On a vote of 8-6, the chair has bad hearing. The motion prevails. All right. Anything further, members? Mm-hmm. Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, Senator Franson being back, I'd move my A5 amendment.
All right.
Again.
Senator Westrom removes the A5. Senator Franson, you're familiar enough, or should we repeat our entire conversation?
Mr. Chair, my only question is...
Senator Franson.
Would the counties have the ability to, similar to the truck weight issue, if they see that this is not not in line with their safety or whatnot, would they still be able to restrict the use of these vehicles at the county level?
Mr. Westrom or Council?
Council could fill in, but Mr. Chair, my understanding is it would be similar to motorcycles and regular vehicles. Certainly they could have local ordinances that would probably impact some of them, but somewhat I think they could, but not in a broad sense, probably with a uniform license. But staff could maybe fill in where I've stated something wrong or haven't stated something.
Ms. Berzosky.
Mr. Chair and Senators, I don't see in this draft any room for local authority to specify where an unconventional vehicle could be operated. And I would call your attention to the final section that says a person may operate an unconventional vehicle on public streets and highways except on a freeway. So that would be state law.
A freeway, Madam Ms. Berzosky, being an interstate.
Mr. Chair, without having the definition in front of me, I think it's a controlled access highway. It doesn't have to be an interstate.
I see. So similar to like a Highway 52 in that stretch where it's controlled access. Ms. Berzosky.
Mr. Chair, yes.
All right. Thank you, Senator Franson.
Mr. Chair, if it's a friendly amendment to Senator Westrom, I'd like to add that ability for counties to be able to control that. Just because I'm not as I'm in line with the amendment with his proposal, Senator Westrom. I do think this is reasonable, but I want to rely on experts. Sure. If they do deem that this is not a reasonable thing for their jurisdictions to not overstep that authority and have that local control still be in place.
Sure. And Mr. Chair, maybe Senator staff Rush could give us an idea on some language. I'd be amenable to that.
We'll work on that.
All right.
Do you need some time to withdraw?
Yes.
Okay. So, Senator Westrom, if you could withdraw the amendment again.
Okay. I'll do that
for
again,
a few minutes, and we'll move on to other amendments while Ms. Berzosky works on that. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I guess I'd like to have a little clarification also on the other
vehicles that we do license that are similar, like the golf carts and the other. I think we license those based on their maximum speed, if I remember correctly. We had a 35-mile-an-hour vehicle that we talked about several years ago, and I think there's been, you know, and I think we may have even bumped that speed. And so there's a, there is a restriction level on the vehicles that are generally used for maintenance, and that would probably include the ones that are used around the Capitol here and used on, for instance, golf courses where they do cross the roads. It seems to me those have a maximum speed that they're limited to. And this one is 60 miles an hour, so it meets the speed limits for every road that isn't a freeway.
We have also, Senator Carl, we have like neighborhood electric vehicles that we permit on city streets under some definitions and restrictions. But if you want to distract Ms. Berezovsky from her work on behalf of Senator Westrom at this time.
Well, Mr. Chair.
Senator Westrom.
Mr. Chair, just and Senator Carlson, the language on this would require them this vehicle to be able to go from one month. From 0 to 60 within 1 mile, it's not a minimum, but it's not a maximum, it's a minimum. And I think what you might be referring to is maximums, where certain vehicles are only able to achieve a certain speed. I mean, these are so that's a difference. I maybe I heard you wrong, or I just wanted to clarify that if that made a difference.
And Mr. Chair,
Senator Carlson,
it's largely the same thing. Yeah. When, you know, being able to go to 60 miles an hour means that they can go 60
right.
miles an
right.
hour. So that is that's a maximum speed that's above some of the others that we do have these special licenses for.
Right. Sorry, I lost track. Who's next? All right. So so you're looking for we were looking for an answer to your question.
Just Mr. Chair, just before I vote on this, I guess I'd like to know what categories of vehicles we do have already licensed. And you know, in this particular case, again, this is a vehicle that looks like a DOT-approved vehicle. It has, in fact, the handout we had, you know, some of them have airbags, some of them have seatbelts, some of them have the lights, the bumpers, all those things that make them look like a regular vehicle. So
right.
I guess I'd like to know.
So why don't we do this? So Senator Westrom has agreed to withdraw his amendment for the time being, while Ms. Berezovsky, maybe Ms. McCormick has an answer to your question. I was going to give Ms. Berezovsky a second time, but maybe we could just have your question answered by Ms. McCormick. What kinds of vehicles are permitted? Where? Under what conditions, Ms. McCormick?
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Pat McCormick, DVS Director. I'm going to ask Tom Henderson, our Vehicle Services Director, to respond.
Mr. Henderson.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I believe the question was what type of vehicles, neighborhood vehicles, normally have a maximum speed of 35 miles an hour. The department doesn't register golf carts. Doesn't register or license golf carts, so I think the most common vehicle that in question here would be the neighborhood vehicle.
And are there other, Mr. Henderson, are there other standards placed on? I mean, I guess, is there a definition for neighborhood vehicles? Neighborhood is this the NEV, the neighborhood electric vehicle? Does it have to be of a certain size, certain equipment features, et cetera, enabled to be? And is it confined just to city streets, county streets?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, these vehicles are defined. Motorized bicycles, neighborhood electric vehicles, they are defined in statutes. Tells what their maximum speeds are. I'm sorry, I don't have that with me at the moment. And it also lists if there's any restrictions that they can go on. Normally, however, they are not allowed on to the highways and the limited access highways and the freeways.
And by highways, you mean like county highways, state highways?
No, the trunk highways.
The trunk highways, state highways. Okay, thank you.
I have the definitions.
All right, Ms. Berezovsky has some definitions to share with us.
Mr. Chair, the medium speed electric vehicle can attain a maximum speed of 35 miles per hour on a paved level surface, and then it's fully enclosed, has at least one door for entry, specifies wheelbase and wheel diameter, and is cross-referenced to a federal definition as well. And then a neighborhood electric vehicle is electrically powered, four wheels, has a speed attainable in 1 mile of at least 20 miles per hour, but not more than 25 miles per hour on a paved level surface. That's all I got.
All right. That answer your question, Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, what was that, the first vehicle, the maximum 35? What was that classification called?
Medium electric.
Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson, yes, medium speed electric vehicle.
Medium speed electric.
MSEV. All right. Senator Franzen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And one last thing. When I mentioned trying to amend Senator Western's amendment in reference and reference to counties, if we can also include cities, just keeping the local control, so cities, counties, and any other municipality, whatever terms we need to add.
I have the language.
So I guess our extended conversation allowed Ms. Berezovsky the time to come up with some language. Senator Westrom.
Well, Mr. Chair, and I think Senator Franzen's intent is if a county or city would so choose, they could impose an additional restriction on. Is that my understanding?
Yes.
Yep.
All right. So Ms. Berezovsky, suggested language.
Mr. Chair, my suggestion would be at the end of 2.7, after the period, insert, a road authority, including the Commissioner of Transportation by order, may prohibit operation of unconventional vehicles on any street or highway under the road authority's jurisdiction.
All right. Senator Westrom and then Senator Franzen to that idea.
Okay. I think that does it.
All right.
That works.
Senator Franzen,
yes.
Makes you comfortable. Senator Carlson.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. That, to make it perfectly clear, this, it would require local authority to prohibit the vehicles, so they're automatically approved unless the local authority prohibits them.
Correct. So it would be an opt-out.
Yeah.
Yes. Senator Berezovsky. Or Ms. Berezovsky. Everyone in this room is a senator. Okay. I'm just going to make it so. All right. Senator Westrom will incorporate that language into the
yes.
A5. Anything further, members? Would anyone else like to testify on the A5? Senator Ms. McCormick.
Mr. Chair, members Senator of the committee, I just want to add that according to AMVA, which you know is the American Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators, unconventional vehicles do not comply with federal safety standards. So that'd be the only other thing I'd want to make sure you're aware of.
All right. Senator Carlson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I'd like to hear from cities and counties to see how they feel about this, if they feel that this is
right.
something that's unduly prescriptive for them.
I see cities and counties coming to the table. Counties made it first. Ms. Bryant.
thank you, Mr. Chair and Senator Carlson. Appreciate the opportunity to weigh in on this amendment. And the counties have opposed this effort in the past. And we appreciate the ability, especially, I mean, one of the reasons we did oppose it was because there wasn't the local option that we've seen in some of these other types of permittances, like with the current mini truck statutes. We actually prefer the current statute that relates to mini trucks that allows counties to authorize limited uses of those vehicles on specific roads. And we've also this session supported removing the sunset on that, making that to be a permanent statute. So we think the current way that this is addressed is the most appropriate. Counties can decide whether to allow these if they like, rather than having an opt-out procedure where every county or road authority would have to take action to kind of maintain the current status. And I think a lot of this, especially from the County Engineers Association, the concerns come from their efforts in the Towards Zero Death campaign and having safety being a huge priority.
Ms. Finn.
Mr. Chair, members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities. And I would concur with what you just heard from Ms. Breidacht. Our preference would be an opt-in situation, which is what the current law allows, so that if residents or businesses want to come before the City Council and say, you know, we want some limited use of these vehicles, it would be a local decision then about whether or not they would have that authority. This is something that's been brought to us repeatedly from the Police Chiefs Association, so I don't want to speak for them, but we do work closely, and they have long maintained a position opposing a broad authorization of use of the mini trucks and other similar vehicles.
Thank you. Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate the input from the counties and the cities. We've had this conversation on different issues when it gets to the local control, and I appreciate the idea behind the local control, but I think about a part of my district where, I don't know if you're familiar with the map of Maplewood, where you have this one little strip that's a mile wide. And so in a very limited distance, traveling along one road, you go from St. Paul through the entire city of Maplewood and into Woodbury. And how does a driver know? You know, how do they know what the rules are just in a little bit over a mile? And so I find this really complicated, and I know we're probably really not talking about putting these in the East Metro necessarily, but I just think it makes it really cumbersome in how we manage these issues. So I agree. I like where we are on this one.
Mile wide reminds me of how we're described sometimes on every subject, a mile wide and an inch deep. all right. Anything further, members? Senator Senjum.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just can't help but say it, and I probably shouldn't, but, you know, somehow we think it's all right for bicycles to ride on highways and motorcycles, too, and there's not much protection in those vehicles. I had a 1964 Volkswagen. If I still had it, I guess I could drive that, and I think that was probably more of a tin can than these vehicles that are being proposed here and so on and so forth. I just maybe think, you know, that risk is borne by the driver, and I'm not sure we have to carry all that risk as a state.
All right. Thank you. Anything further, members? Senator Carlson.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And just on that point, Senator Senjum, the picture that we saw was a four-place, at least a four-passenger vehicle. And so there are people getting into the back seat that are not aware of the safety attributes of the vehicle and whether it has been tested safe or not, which I think is, you know, to some degree, that's the choice of the person getting in the vehicle. However, I guess I would support your bill or your amendment, Senator Westrom, if you had an opt-in mechanism with it, because I think that the city should be able to take some responsibility on this. And there are a lot of cities, and people would be driving through these cities or counties without knowing without the county having some responsibility on authorizing them. And they do not meet the requirements of a vehicle that goes on the same roads. So if you would have an opt-in, I would certainly support this.
Mr. Chair?
Senator Senjum.
You know, I just think these are or perhaps will be a trendy thing. You know, if you need an extra car at home, you don't want to take up, you know, half your garage or all of your garage. You know, there's a lot of reasons that I think these for short trips are going to become popular. And, you know, if we want to talk the environmental side and climate change and all that.
Oh, you're going to go get me again.
That, you can do that, but I won't.
You're going to get me on the trendy argument.
But I think they are a vehicle of the future, and I think we ought to recognize that and adopt this.
Trendy and environmentally sound.
I got you, don't I?
Oh, my gosh. All right. Senator Carlson.
Mr. Chair, I guess I don't want to belabor the point, but they might be trendy, but they don't meet the standards. And, for instance, if you need a small vehicle, you can buy a motorcycle, and then you take the responsibility of what a motorcycle offers you. But if you want an enclosed vehicle, the go-car, the smart car, they're all probably as small as these other vehicles, but they do meet crash tests. They do have DOT-approved restraints, windows, tires, lights, everything that approves them to go on to the highways and even the freeways.
Unless they meet up with a heavyweight truck. All right. I'm on a roll. Tip your waitress. All right. Anything further? Anyone else want to testify on this subject? So we have the A5 with the opt-out language incorporated by Senator Westrum for locals. All in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
No. Motion passes. All right. Just a time check. Not that we have to be done by noon, but we're in session at noon. Well, that would be nice if we were done by noon. Anything further, members? Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to offer the A14 amendment, please.
Senator Kent offers the A14, and you can go ahead and start describing it.
All right. Members, we've had a lot of discussion about MnDOT and its effectiveness and how it can be even more effective in its operations. What this amendment would do is to provide $300,000 in grants to review and assess the department's organizational structure with an eye towards enhancing organizational effectiveness, encourage prudent allocation of resources, and deliver the greatest value to Minnesota. This review and assessment would be done by a partnership of the Humphrey School of Public Affairs, the Carson School of Management, and the State Smart Transportation Initiative at the University of Wisconsin. It outlines parameters for these reviews, including the relationship of districts, divisions, offices, and sections of the department to the state's transportation goals. For example, budgets assigned to each division, district, office, and section, the ratio of employees to supervisors in all of those categories, recommendations identifying best practices and comparisons with other state departments of transportation, recommendations regarding an appropriate ratio of employees to supervisors for the variety of activities performed by that department, recommendations regarding the appropriate increase in department operations that would result from increases in capital investments. So if the investment's going up 20%, is it smart to automatically increase operations 20%, or is that more streamlined to 10, for example? Recommendations regarding the appropriate fiscal responsibility assigned to engineers and inspectors. Recommendations regarding the appropriate fiscally constrained size of the trunk highway system, and recommendations regarding how to achieve that optimum size. So we have had a lot of discussion about how decisions are made, how processes are operating, and this asks some of the most informed entities in our state and region to take a really dedicated look at this question and help inform processes moving forward.
Thank you, Senator Kent. Questions, members? Senator Newman.
Mr. Chair, Senator Kent, paragraph A, you've indicated a partnership that would include certain specific entities. Could you speak to why you have selected those entities and whether or not this partnership would be limited only to those if there were other entities that would also be able to contribute to this particular study?
Senator Kent.
Mr. Chair and Senator Newman, these were identified, frankly, as being familiar with our entities and close here and the leaders in their respective areas, so public affairs, management, bringing the private sector perspective into it, and the transportation entity out of Wisconsin.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman.
Senator Kent, two questions. I'm just seeking information mm-hmm. because I'm not at all familiar with it. Mm-hmm. Who identified these organizations?
This has come out of a partnership, thank you, Mr. Chair, with in discussions with people from MnDOT, people from the other body. It's been sort of an ongoing work in progress to get to this point and open to discussion about these entities or others that should be considered and included.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman.
One final question, Senator Kent. It looks like it's limited to those entities. Would it not be perhaps wise to allow for some other entity to be included if it was deemed in the future to be appropriate?
I would be open to allowing that kind of flexibility. We just want to make sure that it is of a high caliber, people who are entities that are familiar with these types of operations, because we want to get good results. You know, I think we all have been, and I mean, I can look around this table and think of many, many different conversations and efforts to make sure we're doing the best we can here in Minnesota with the significant investment in the significant part of our state. And so that's why this list was created, but I'm open to alternative solutions if we make sure we maintain a level of expertise and professionalism.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Newman.
Senator Kent, and I will leave that to you if you decide you want to open it up to the possibility of other entities. I'm not familiar enough with this to offer an amendment, but I just wanted to make the observation. It looks like it's closed to the possibility of others participating.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Anything further on the A14? Would anyone like to testify? I've been bad about asking for that. Senator Sindrum.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Senator Kent, I have maybe no problem with this, but at least in my life experience, the city and the county engineers who interact with MnDOT virtually almost daily and I think have a pretty good understanding of what they like and what they don't like about the efficiencies of MnDOT might be a good add-on to those that are involved in the assessment and the report.
Mr. Chair and Senator Sindrum, I think you make an excellent point, and we could certainly incorporate that into part of the discussion. I mean, I would imagine when I look at something like the Carlson School of Management, they would use a 360 type review on a regular basis, and I would think they would identify those type of stakeholders quickly, but we can certainly add that in specifically.
Mr. Chair, just
Senator Sindrum.
You know, again, we're all victims of our own life experience, but I know in my city, in my county, and especially my city, there have been some really strong debates between MnDOT city engineers and on conflicts and processes and procedures, and maybe they don't have to happen if there's a little bit more oil on the hinges.
And Senator Sindrum, hopefully the language we have in the bill around selection. You know, the whole selection criteria initiative will also help with that, and that's attributable to a lot of your work and your initiative as well. Anything further, members? All right, and I called for public testimony. No one's jumping to the table. All in favor of the A14, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye. Opposed, no. Motion carries. Senator Kent.
Okay.
All right, anything further, members? Senator Kent, you had an oral?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I do have an oral amendment, not unrelated to the same kind of conversation, on page 84, lines 26 and 27. So in that section 2, I'll wait for council to get to the page. I would like to offer the amendment that we would delete line 26, and on line 27 through the word or as one of the exemptions, as part of that exemption.
So this would have the effect, Senator Kent, of ensuring that in the transportation project selection process, major renovation would also kind of be subject to that whole selection process, analysis,
yes,
improvements, et cetera. All right. Thank you. Questions, members?
Is
it's exempt
from that again?
Would no longer be exempt, would be subject to.
Right.
Right. Yeah. By deleting that language.
Joys of negatives.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
Okay, can we restate that?
So the amendment is to delete on lines.
Could you go a page and line?
Okay. Oh, yeah, 84.26 and 84.27. Senator Kent, just remind us.
Yes, so what we would be doing, and again, this is in the transportation project selection process under the section of exemptions. We would leave the part that says it's exempt if subjecting it to this evaluation process would result in a loss of federal funds. We obviously want to leave that as an exemption, but it keeps in the process this aspect of looking at the capacity of the infrastructure.
Preservation, maintenance, capital, preventative treatment, or safety project.
That's the part that would be deleted.
Right.
Okay, so, deleting so that line 84.26
would be deleted.
So if members remember, the initiative is to improve the process by which MnDOT selects projects, basically. More objective, more collaborative, more transparent, et cetera. And there had been some exemptions to that process of selecting projects. This is to establish the STIP, basically. Eliminated from that idea was preservation, maintenance, capital, preventative treatment, and safety projects that didn't relate to capacity improvements. If this amendment were to be adopted, those would be a part of this open and transparent selection process.
Yes.
Does that make sense? All right. All in favor of?
I have to change the active select.
Oh.
But, yeah.
All right. So Ms. Berezovsky has an improvement to make
as usual
to the amendment.
Mr. Chair, it doesn't fit with the full sentence without changing the words around a little bit. So because the beginning of the sentence is on 84.19. A proposed project is exempt from the process if it is. So I would suggest delete the entire 84.26 after the two, 0.27 and 0.28, and insert subject to a loss of federal funds if it is selected through the process in this section, under this section.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. Okay. All right. Questions, members? Mr. Peterson. Welcome.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And members, the department has some concern over making this change for two reasons primarily. One is it really would expand the scope of the process that we'd have to undertake to, to analyze all these additional projects that fall under these characterizations. And it would, I'm trying to think back to what our fiscal note said on this, but I think it was there'd be a substantial amount of additional cost to expand this, the number of evaluations required under this provision. And the other thing is that the factors that are alluded to up above, congestion mitigation, economic development, accessibility, environmental quality, metropolitan rural balance, land use, they definitely apply to expansion-type projects where we're really improving mobility or access to different places. But when it comes to preservation, maintenance, capital, preventive treatment, safety projects, those are really based upon, engineering analysis. They're preservation of the system that already exists. We're not providing new capacity or new facilities. And in terms of safety, we're looking at modifying the geometry so that there's a reduced probability of crashes. So, I guess in my very initial analysis here, it seems like those criteria would not lend themselves well to the type of analysis or to these types of projects.
Thank you. Appreciate the perspective. Senator Kent.
Mr. Chair, and I'm wondering, Mr. Peterson, if you could give us some more concrete examples of these types of projects.
Is that a pun?
Yeah.
Sure.
There's always a transportation pun.
Mr. Peterson.
Mr. Chairman and Senator Kent, so preservation, the projects that fall into preservation would be resurfacing. It could be a more extensive resurfacing that would require removal of the existing pavement and replacing it, or it could be just milling down of the existing pavement so that a new surface could be applied. It could be, repairing a deck on a bridge. It could be repairing a pier on a bridge. Maintenance, those types of projects are things that are really have less durability than a bituminous overlay, for example. It could be just what they call a microchip seal, where they spray oil on and then sprinkle some kind of aggregate or mineral on top to create a hard surface and those kinds of things. A blow up in the summertime when it gets hot and the concrete expands too far and one concrete panel jumps over the top of the adjacent one. We go in and, we hire a contractor a lot of times to go in there and knock that stuff out and replace it. Those could be guardrail repair, those kinds of things too. I mean, we deal with those things by contract. Those things are not typically in our STIP, as Senator Dibble referred to that, our four-year capital investment plan. But those are the kinds of things. And then safety projects, those would be things that would range all the way from, like, rumble strips to cable median guardrail and could be changing an intersection configuration and those kinds of things as well.
So, Mr. Peterson, I'm sensitive to your argument. On the other hand, I do think sometimes some of these what are in some perspectives they don't rise to the level of STIP and they're viewed as routine maintenance still have create substantial heartburn among various stakeholders. Folks are wondering, was the right, was an opportunity lost when we went in and did some maintenance, for example? That happens a lot, actually, in my city. MnDOT comes in, does a maintenance thing, lost an opportunity to do something to improve a circumstance, improve a situation, decisions made about materials or decisions made about what is going to receive maintenance treatment versus this over here. So maybe maybe there's a secondary level of collaboration analysis process that we can subject some of this what is deemed more routine but doesn't rise to this level of analysis in the creation of the STIP. I'm just thinking out loud here. I understand what you're arguing, but on the other hand, I still think just simply exempting these routine things, these are some of the things that still cause, confusion. How did this decision get made? Why did we lose this opportunity? We didn't have this conversation. We could have done something slightly different and improved a situation, but the die is cast. A contract has been let, or people discovered after it's been done, and they didn't have any idea.
And
Senator Kent.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And that's exactly what I have in mind on this one. I think people have heard me talk about I-94 and Century Avenue. And, that seemed to be just a sort of cleaning up of that intersection. And by the time it was all done, there's no way for a human being to get across that intersection if they don't have a car around them. That's right by 3M. There are a lot of people who live really nearby there who would much rather ride a bike to 3M rather than having to deal with parking over there. It's just not safe now. And, that seems like fairly routine maintenance. It did at the time. It was a big project, but didn't really increase capacity, but that's the kind of thing that should have been thought about ahead of time, and now I'm quite sure at some point we'll go back and put in crosswalks and crossings and that kind of thing, and that'll cost more in the long run. So I agree. I think, I'm willing to withdraw this amendment at this time, but I would like to figure out a way to make sure we're categorizing these things appropriately so that attention is paid where it's merited.
So, Senator, or Mr. Peterson, Senator Ken has withdrawn the amendments. However, I will renew the amendment in finance if we haven't figured these problems out.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Kent, I agree there are situations where there is where a more expanded kind of view of what should be done with the project could be beneficial, and so I'm happy to work with you to try to figure out kind of what those criteria and how that might work.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Senator Kent withdraws her oral amendment. Anything further, members? All right. Senator Peterson.
Well, Mr. Chair, I was just going to ask you, if there's no more amendments, if you could offer us some insight in regards to Section 36 on page 54 of the bill. It's the city parking fees. As I was reviewing that, I didn't recall ever having a hearing on this, but what this appears to do is give the cities of Minneapolis and St. Paul the ability to impose an additional fee of their choosing by ordinance for every single parking spot in each of those cities that's either publicly or privately owned. So that would mean it includes any parking ramp in the city, whether it be at an apartment where it's a condominium type situation or a rental situation. Is that your intent in that section?
Senator Peterson, no, I don't think this would apply. This would apply only to commercial. I would ask representatives from Minneapolis to come forward to help us. This is new. It came in, it was introduced in the bill amendment last night, so it is a new subject. I see Mr. Wagenius is coming forward. And so they can help explain the initiative. It's fairly straightforward. It would allow for the cities of St. Paul or Minneapolis to impose a fee. They can vary the fee according to the nature of the parking space, whether it's structured parking or surface parking, and the purposes of the fee would be confined to eligible uses that are described in Subdivision 5. I understand. So the area is limited to the central business, the downtown areas of Minneapolis and St. Paul, for the purpose of paying for public realm amenities in those areas of Minneapolis and St. Paul. That's the rough outline. Mr. Wagenius can help shed a little more light in responding to your inquiry.
Yes, Mr. Wagenius. Chair. Peter Wagenius, Policy Director for Minneapolis Mayor Betsy Hodges. To answer the specific question asked, the legislation would allow the two cities, Minneapolis and St. Paul, in an area around their downtowns, to enact through ordinance a commercial parking fee. It would not apply to condominiums or residential parking. I'd be happy to answer other questions or speak to the bill more broadly, but to that question it was asked.
Senator Peterson.
Mr. Chair and members, or Mr. Wagenius, could you point out to the section of the bill where it clarifies it's just commercial? I just see under the definition that says whether publicly or privately owned, it does not point out whether it's commercial or residential under the definition.
So, Mr. Senator Peterson and Mr. Wagenius, I think counsel just pointed out to me that's the language at which motor vehicles are permitted to park for a fee. That implies commercial paid parking.
That's correct, Mr. Chair.
Or not implies, it means commercial paid parking. So if you pay for your parking at that spot.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair and members, there's many residential units. In fact, one right down here that's owned by the city of St. Paul, where there is an additional fee for parking in a residential building, and it's your intention that does not, because they rent units that don't get parking, and they rent units that do get parking for an additional fee that's owned by the city of St. Paul. I forget what it's called right now, where the Lund grocery store is. So it's your intention that would not qualify for this.
Mr. Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, I work for the City of Minneapolis, and I couldn't speak to the St. Paul example explicitly, but I could tell you that our intention was not to include residential, and we worked with Senate Counsel on this language clarification, which on that point would certainly be welcomed by the City of Minneapolis. I assume it would be welcomed by the City of St. Paul as well.
So, Mr. Chair, it's your position, then the definition does not include residential for this?
Senator Peterson, yes, it is my position that this does not include residential parking.
Thank you.
But we could make it more explicit, though. Ms. Berezovsky.
Mr. Chair, a possibility would be on 54.8, after the word include, insert residential parking spaces or...
That excludes.
That's excluding.
Okay, so after the words "but does not include," and we would insert the words "residential parking spaces or." I'll make that motion. Any questions on that, Senator Kiffmeyer?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just puzzled. It seems like to apply it only on commercial, but not on publicly owned parking ramps and other things like that. We are once again applying a tax.
Senator Kiffmeyer, it would include publicly owned parking.
My thought,
whether publicly or privately.
So the discussion is residential, not including the residential.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, Mr. Chair, I think Senator Kiffmeyer's point is valid in that. We already know that any commercial or industrial-owned property right now in this state pays a higher property tax rate, a special property tax rate that no other business pays, quite frankly. And now we're adding a fee, and I realize your intent here because you call out the Nicollet Mall, PV Plaza, Downtown East Commons. You know, these are all projects that certainly you're intending these dollars to go for and pay for. Because I think you view this as the cities view this as an easier step in terms of going through the regular capital bonding project, or better yet, paying for those projects themselves as a city municipality. It's just unfortunate to see this committee going in this direction when there was no opportunity for anybody that may be opposed to this to be able to say so in a hearing leading up to this committee. Certainly they have the opportunity now, but even, you know, we basically had a 12-hour, well, no notice that this was going in the bill, and then now 12-hour notice basically till this hearing this morning. So I would venture to say there's people that are opposed to this that have gotten no chance to express their opposition.
Senator Peterson, we'll have two more committee hearings, full finance and then tax committee, before this gets to the floor.
Mr. Chair, I won't wish you luck in that.
All right. Thanks.
So, Mr.
And this was introduced as a bill.
Okay.
Late. It was introduced Friday. So, Senator Kiffmeyer.
Mr. Chair, I think having a member of the tax committee here, so I'm glad to hear it is going to taxes, because I think we have a court ruling that a fee is a tax. Is that correct?
I know we had a governor who declared it as such. Do we have such a court ruling?
Mr. Chair and Senator Kiffmeyer, I believe there is a court ruling to that effect, at least in that one situation. But I think the generally a tax is imposed. Well, a fee is for a specific service. It's collected for the performance of a specific service, and a tax is imposed on a general basis, not to pay for the specific service being performed. That's my understanding of the distinction between a fee and a tax.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think exactly this fits a tax. The people who are paying this extra fee are not getting an additional service regarding parking. This is a tax.
Thank you. Senator Pratt.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a couple of points. One, to agree with Senator Kiffmeyer, when we're talking about the owner of the parking space paying the new fee or tax and not the user of that space, then I think it truly does become an additional property tax. Second, you know, as I look at this, when I see paid by the owner, there's no clarification that we intend it to be the owner if it's a public entity. In fact, we exclude public entities, governmental units, from most of these property taxes anyway. And so I think there has to be clarification on that. And finally, you know, I'm not going to argue with Mr. Wagenius around what's best for a city, but for someone who works downtown and we see promotions to try to get people to shop downtown, and one of the main promotions seems to be come park for free during these specific hours, it seems like this is counterintuitive to that initiative. So, you know, Mr. Chair, I respectfully disagree with this provision, and I think it's going to be harmful to downtown. And I certainly think it should go to tax committee.
Well, Senator Pratt, this bill has a number of provisions that, trust me, will propel it to the tax committee. It'd be pretty funny to try to bypass the tax committee with this
point
bill.
Point well taken. Thank you.
Senator Sandringham, then Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And is it Mr. Wagenius?
Yes.
Can you just help me think through this? So I'm going down to Minneapolis. I park in a ramp. I'm driving out. I'm paying for whatever the little meter tells me I need to pay. And on top of that, there's going to be another fee. And then the question is, why don't you just charge more to park in the ramps if that's what you want?
Mr. Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, we don't anticipate that there would be a specific charge on top. We anticipate that it would be built in by the owner or operator, that there would be one charge. There's no pretense that this wouldn't be passed on to the consumer in some form. But to be clear, this would apply to both publicly owned parking ramps as well as privately owned. The city of Minneapolis is a large component of the downtown parking market, and it would be unfair for us to exempt ourselves. We did not seek that in the legislation. Publicly owned ramps, City of Minneapolis ramps, will be subject to this as well as private.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Senator. So in a public ramp, okay, city owns, I assume, or somebody does, in the public domain, you're going to pay your exit charge, and then there's going to be an additional fee on top of the exit charge?
Be inside.
So, Senator Sandringham, I think Mr. Wagenius responded by saying it'd be built into the
Whatever the fee is.
Yeah, right. It wouldn't be itemized, per se.
And so then, Mr. Chair, Senator, yes. Or Mr. Wagenius, isn't that, I just tell you, in Rochester, I mean, city council can determine parking ramp rates. Why can't Minneapolis do that without coming to the legislature?
Mr. Wagenius.
Mr. Chair, in the interest of being open with all the cities of the first class, we did speak with officials in Rochester and as well as Duluth, and Rochester is in a different situation than the city of Minneapolis or the city of St. Paul. And as I understand it, in the city of Rochester, the parking is publicly owned to a great extent. In Minneapolis, while Minneapolis is a significant player, we are not dominant. There is more private parking than there is public parking. In Rochester, it is far more of a public enterprise. At least that's how it was explained to me by the deputy city administrator.
All right. Who did I see next? Senator Peterson.
So, Mr. Chair, Mr. Wagenius, is the University of Minnesota in favor of this provision?
Mr. Chair, we have not spoken to the University of Minnesota because you'll note that the geographic boundaries do not include the campus, either East Bank or West Bank.
I did notice that. Thank you.
All right. Great. All right. Senator Ryan? Okay. All right. So I think I will move the language residential parking spaces or to be included on 54.8 in between the words include or after the word include. All in favor of that amendment, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries. All right. Anything further on 1904? All right. Senator Peterson asked for a roll call. Everyone here who would like to vote? Okay. All right. Clerk will take the roll.
Don't you need a motion to pass?
Oh, I guess so. Point. So I will move. Why don't we have you move it, Madam Chair?
Mr. Chair, I will move Senate File Number 1904 as amended be recommended to pass and referred to
full finance. Yeah. All right, thank you. On Senator Kent's motion, clerk will take the roll.
Senator Dibble.
Yes.
Senator Carlson.
Yes.
Senator Champion.
Yes.
Senator Franzen.
Yes.
Senator Jensen.
Yes.
Senator Kent.
Yes.
Senator Kiffmeyer.
No.
Senator Newman.
No.
Senator Osmek.
No.
Senator Peterson.
No.
Senator Pratt.
No.
Senator Reinert.
Yes.
Senator Rest.
Yes.
Senator Senjum.
No.
Senator Tomasoni. Senator Westrum.
No.
Senator Uyghur.
Yes.
Senator Tomasoni.
A vote of 9-7, the motion passes. Thank you, members. Excellent discussion, excellent work. I really appreciate everyone's participation. And we will recess until when? Yeah. So we'll recess to the college chair likely a bit after session. Oh, okay, so you can leave your stuff. We'll clean up the room because I think you're going to come back and caucus in a few minutes, so we make sure we won't leave everything out. But, yeah, you can just leave your stuff here, and we'll redistribute it when we come back. We are recessed. Okay.